All right. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for tuning in. And what's up, Stryker? How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Lots good. Of stuff going on today.
Yeah. Good, good. So I just wanted to say I've learned the Spanish for the Jew, El Judío. I heard that girl with the really red lipstick say it over and over again. That was pretty interesting. Let me see if I get the audio, but it doesn't really matter because it's in Spanish. But she's basically, it's what you explained what this was. This is a march that they have every year?
So every year in February, nationalists in Spain commemorate the Blue Division, Azul División, Blau Division, whatever you want to call it. They were a Wehrmacht unit and then a Waffen-SS unit in the Second World War. They were all Spanish. They were veterans of the Spanish Civil War. And they were, you know, National Socialists. And they went there and they fought some of the most really outnumbered kind of amazing historical feats of history in terms of warfare, like the Battle of Krasny Bor, where the Spanish unit held off massive waves of Soviet attack while the I believe it was the Totenkopf division was retreating the panzer tanks. The Spanish unit in World War II was highly decorated very, very much respected. So these people go to Spain, go to the cemetery where they're buried, and there's a memorial march, and they have it every year. Now, if I recall correctly, it was either very small or didn't happen last year. And the year before, I mean, it often attracted old people that you know, but as the veterans die off, there's fewer and fewer people. But what's amazing this year is there's tons of young people there. And what's even more amazing is the media says it was 300 people that went. It looks closer to 1,000.
It was bigger than 300.
Yes. And listen, let me tell you straight up about this. The people that go to these marches, they're not populists. They're not even like regular like these are like not like National Socialists that go to this thing. They're not even like Francoists.
Right. They're going to call them Francoists, but yeah, they're harder core than that.
Right. Right. So if this march attracts 1,000 people, just imagine how big the Spanish nationalist movement has gotten overnight. And you see tons of articles in Israeli media about this. Mm-hmm. Jewish media is going nuts. There's a guy on Twitter called Josh Feldberg.
Yes.
Who's a kike from Argentina. Yes. And he is
he's trying to get it shut down.
Well, what I said on Twitter just now is very simple. I'm like, imagine being a guy named Feldberg and you go to Spain to tell Spanish people that are commemorating the memory of Spanish war heroes that they should be put in jail for that.
Right. Well, here's the thing.
In a sane society, he would go to jail.
Feldberg isn't even really from Argentina. I was looking at his profile. He says he's partly from Argentina, but he lives in he's from Camden. It literally says Jew from Camden.
No, part Camden, New
Jersey. Well, where is it? Where Camden? Where then?
I don't know, but I can't imagine a Jew.
I can't imagine a Jew living from. Well, maybe he's just saying that for like clout or something like that, pretending he's like from the streets or something. Anyway, whatever. It doesn't really matter. He clearly speaks in an American dialectic, but then he's like, or American dialect, but then he speaks Spanish as well. So he's just a Jew that speaks Spanish and English.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing I saw was that he was like, everybody reach out to. First of all, he says, okay, like, this, you know, the press is ignoring you, whatever. Tell the press. It's like, well, the Jewish press isn't ignoring you. And then he's like, tell the interior minister and the prime minister that they need to, like, make this illegal. DM me for contact info.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine, wait, what? Excuse me?
Imagine being a random Jew saying, I'm tweeting you, prime minister of Spain. I know you got nothing better to do right now.
Well, the interesting thing is that he seems to have some amount of ability to, at least he thinks he does, he seemed to put pressure on the government of Spain. And he says the only thing the government of Spain is going to respond to is international pressure. So what he really wants is like Kamala Harris to like call, or Anthony Blinken. He wants Anthony Blinken to place a call.
Yes, and that's be what like, they did in Greece. Yeah,
yeah, can you make this go away? Can you put these people in jail? And of course, that young woman.
I'll tell you what's happening right now. People in New York, in Tel Aviv, in London, and in Paris. It's what is it? I think Spain is 7 hours ahead, 6 hours ahead. It's like 2 a.m. there right now. And people in New York and Paris and London and Tel Aviv are blowing up the phones in Spain, okay?
Yeah.
And sorry about that.
Yeah.
And they're bitching at some fucking greaseball right now who's getting really fucking pissed off, and he's probably going to do something. I mean, I hate to say it, but
I wonder, like, because they're saying that he wants that woman, the woman that was giving that speech where she kept saying, El Judio, which is pretty funny. She's pretty hot, actually, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, she's cute. Yeah.
They want her put in jail. They want to put her in jail, literally. They are asking for her to be put in jail. And they're mad because apparently some rapper was criticizing the government or something and got arrested for... Because they have a law in Spain, I guess, is delicta de odio, meaning like odious speech. But they're like, that's just open to interpretation. So if they want to see... If they choose to see a speech where somebody says, like, the Jews are responsible for all these international problems as odious speech, they can. They don't have to, but if they'd like to see, they basically it looks like Spain is actually punishing some indecent speech on part of a rapper, but not punishing just these nationalists that did this march and said, you know, a lot of these problems internationally are caused by Jews. So Jews are like, that's literally exactly the opposite of how it's supposed to work. Like, you're supposed to allow rappers to say whatever things they want and attack whatever institutions they want to and be presented as cool to all the kids for doing so. And people that say Nazi stuff are all just supposed to immediately go to jail.
Yeah. Well, the rapper was like threatening in his songs, something like that. The royal family.
Yeah,
in Spain. That's why he got in trouble.
Right.
Not that the royal family is worth anything.
No, I mean, I'm not going to stick up for them, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over that, frankly.
Yeah.
Very, very low priority thing. It's like, who cares? Like,
yeah. But, you know, the thing is, though, see, the way these laws work is that they're open-ended and they're done. They're deliberately open-ended.
Yeah.
Because what they want to do, like, for example, this march is in and of itself borderline illegal in Spain.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that if the march only has 50 people at it, they'll just ignore it.
Right, because they don't want to call attention to it.
But if there's 500 people, 600 people, maybe even 800 or 900 people at the march, then they're gonna use the law.
Well, like, it's a similar thing like Charlottesville. Like, you know, even though they can't straight up say Charlottesville is illegal, but when you had like white nationalist marches in America or even Nazi marches where it's like 10 guys in the, you know, the classic armband and Stahlhelm. Or guys in like 10 guys in like, I saw, you know, a KKK protest from like, you know, the one from right before Charlottesville where there's like 30 people.
Oh, there's no problems there, right?
Yeah, well, that one, there was a lot of crazy leftists, but they were only cared because Charlottesville. They had seen all the propaganda about Charlottesville and they just showed up on the wrong weekend. But, but previous to that, that kind of stuff was ignored. Like, those kind of things went on in America and they were generally ignored. Jews didn't really make a big deal about it. But now it's like, oh, shit, now there's like 2,000 people at this thing.
Yeah.
And that's really, we're really going to have to shut that down. And, of course, in America, they can't just straight up say speech is illegal, so they have to use other means to do it. But
yeah, but it's all the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
And in Spain, you better believe that they actually use that hate speech law because a guy who I like a lot, Pedro Varela, he was put in prison for publishing Holocaust revisionist books.
Yeah.
And he did like 2 years in prison for that. This guy is not like, you know, he's not a soccer hooligan or anything like that. Right. He's like, he's an intellectual and a book curator. He had a bookstore, and they put him in prison for that. So yeah, they are willing to do that. And I saw that the whatever the Spanish version of the ADL is, was calling for her arrest.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a problem for her. She should just open up an OnlyFans,
not to do any stuff,
but to do legal fees.
Yeah, open up an OnlyFans where she'll just like sell audio of herself saying it's the Jews, and then like
dudes
can subscribe to that, and that could pay. Like, but you know, maybe you know the funny thing is, of course, Jews, they always play the victim in this stuff, and they're like, you know, of course, you know, and so it's really funny when you see a Jew complaining that a law is open ended, like they're complaining this odious speech law in Spain is open ended. It's not explicit. Doesn't say you can't say mean things about Jews. Of course, that's how it's intended to be used. They never complain about that when they're using said open ended laws against you. It's like only like, oh, you know, as usual. But again, it's like basically Jews just cry and scream, and it's now up to the government of Spain to like prove itself to them, right? Where it's
the problem is, you know what the problem is that they're going to have with this is that because it's like a young, like a cute young girl,
yeah,
over there, it's gonna be a tough sell.
Yeah, yeah. In Spain, it's like they, it's not gonna look good to put a cute girl.
Police officer is like, oh, she could be my daughter.
Yeah,
you know, they're gonna have a tough time with that. Jews are gonna really have to put the match underneath people's asses to get them to do something about this. But
Basically, the sympathy, the instinctual sympathy of any onlooker is going to be for her.
Yes.
Particularly when they're like, oh, she's being locked up for political speech. They'll be like, what?
Yes.
Excuse me? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Now, I know in Spain, you know, political speech has not historically been a big thing that the government necessarily respects. But it doesn't.
Well, I'll say this. We haven't had a rally like that in years.
Yeah.
So the whole thing, I mean, on paper, the U.S. is much freer than Spain is. And yet they're the ones having these rallies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that just goes to show you the Constitution doesn't mean anything.
Well, the Constitution is a formality. Jews see it as an annoying formality that they need to get over. And they formulated a basic ground plan, which is they accuse you of terrorism. And it's like any kind of activism. I mean, think about this. You are supposed to live. Think about the assumptions you take for granted in America versus what you know about the actual lay of the land. Even as like a person that's not that politically savvy or hasn't been that politically involved or is sort of only on the fringes, it's like, okay, America has free speech, theoretically. Like, you've been taught that since you were a kid. Yet you know, right? Not just even Nazi or National Socialists or even white nationalists, but just right-wing political activism is going to get you fucking banned.
Yes.
Like, it's going to. And so where's the fucking Constitution? Like, what, you know, it doesn't
mean anything.
It's irrelevant. And the reason is because they just found basically what they do. I mean, that's why Antifa exists. That's Antifa's job in America. Like, we were talking on Tedious the other day about how in Europe, you know, how Christian Exu and these types rely on not just the ability to get you gay ops, but also the ability to dox you and get you fired, where it's harder in Europe to do that. So historically in Europe, Antifa has to just go beat someone's ass. They have to actually go do crimes, like something, break into people's houses when they're not there or when they are there, beat them up, stab them, kill them sometimes. But in America, they expect to just rely on corporate capital power, capitalist power, to punish you because there's no law protecting you in America. There's nothing in a lot of European countries. I think it's illegal to dox people.
It is, and, in Germany at least.
Yeah, and it's also they have certain protections as workers.
Like, where you can't just get people fired. Asking me, like, how can we help Mr. Bond? Mr. Bond is apparently in trouble in Austria.
Yeah.
And the thing is, no one even knows who he is because they have to protect his identity.
And also, like, I would like to be able to help. I have to confess, I don't know.
Yeah, they're asking
the laws there. I don't know how the legal system works. I don't know any lawyers. Right. I don't know anything about what to do there. I mean, we're used to navigating the American system. Of course, we're American, so we know people here. But, like, I wish I could. I don't know. I mean, it would be up to someone in Germany.
I mean, I've seen some fundraisers pop up, but how do I know if it's for him? Like,
that's the other thing. It's like, I just don't know. I can't vet that. So,
But the thing is that one thing you'll notice about the Spanish March is that you'll see actually tons of, like, there's a Catholic priest there that gave a speech, like an actual ordained Catholic priest. There's a ton of, like, kind of middle-aged, like, well-dressed, like, elegant women.
Yeah.
Like waving Celtic cross flags. There's professional looking people. There's skinheads there.
Yeah.
There's like this girl in a Falange shirt. There's all types of people there.
Yeah.
There's a fantastic cross section of Spanish society at this march. And the reason for that is that even though that exists there too, it's not as intense. The status oriented mindset of I can't be seen here,
right,
because we have a cross section of people, and that's for, by the way, for a variety of reasons, right? I mean, I don't know what the laws are like in terms of firing people for their political beliefs and things like that. Like, maybe they have more protections than we do. But the point is that, like, I can't think of there's certain types of personality types and types of people at this march that I can't imagine coming to one of our marches, right? At least not right now. But in the future, maybe that'll change. But that's one reason why these people seem to have more protections for their activism. It's because they have all types of people, right?
Yeah.
If you let them kind of, I don't want to use the word, but ghettoize you into one little subculture,
right,
it becomes easier for them to mobilize different sectors of society against you.
Yes, because they can always draw on other resentments that might exist or other fears that people might have. Like, if it's all, I mean, let's be honest, if it's all young white men, then, which it mostly overwhelmingly in America, it's going to be, and Charlottesville was overwhelmingly, whether they just stigmatize young white men, and they get, they get, like, boomer liberals and boomer conservatives to attack you. They get like feminists. They basically any other grievance, because the Jews have been spent a long time building up grievances against white men in America. It's one of their main pastimes. Yeah. So they just activate all of those, and they use it for their own benefit, which is why, like, when you see a Jew pushing a grievance culture on behalf of somebody else, you should just immediately be like, aren't you Jewish? Like, what?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. Like, why is this your problem?
I'm actually writing a research article. It's a very long research article about the attempt going on as we speak to revive the Frankfurt School, Frankfurt School, the Institute for Social Research.
Yeah.
And it already exists in Brooklyn. It's called the Brooklyn Institute of Social Research.
Yeah.
And I read so the executive director, of course, is all Jewish except for the executive director, who, by the way, is also a Jew, but he has a Pajit name. It's like Anjay Chowdhury. But I read one of his writings on the website, and he's like a college professor. They're all college professors. And he says in it, he says, I brought back the Institute of Social Research because I was inspired by the Frankfurt School. And the reason I was inspired by the Frankfurt School is because I'm a Jew.
Yeah.
Like, he just says it.
Right.
Now, if I were to say that, I'd be called a conspiracy theory.
Right.
Here's the guy who is trying to revive the Frankfurt School telling you that the Frankfurt School, and he says, what I want to do with this Frankfurt School is I want people who aren't Jewish to also participate. He says this on the website.
Right.
Well, unlike the original Frankfurt School.
Well, it's funny.
All Jews.
We were reading that tweet by I forget the guy's name. We were in this tweet storm by this the guy who fancies himself as a philosopher. I don't think he's Jewish. He might be. I know he can't be Jewish because a Jew wouldn't make this kind of argument on Tedious, where he's pretending to come from the right. He's being like, "Oh, like you can't fit me in your box" or something like that. Is his Twitter name?
One of those. And,
yeah, he's got a website called like New Discourses or something like that, and he's out there and he's saying he's saying that basically. He's basically making the argument to Jews, like, and he's definitely not our guy by any stretch of the imagination, because he's appealing to Jews. He's making the argument to Jews, like, you should stop. You have to realize, A, like, a lot of the motivation for people to be anti-Semitic comes from the Frankfurt School, and you have to face up to the fact that it was all Jewish.
Yeah.
But then he's like, and you can't always just be like shutting people down, because that makes them think that you know, he's basically giving advice to Jews. Whenever you see someone that will do that, you're like, either you're a coward or you're sucking up to them for some other reason.
Yeah, or a slick spittle.
Yeah, and you're trying to, or you have some other agenda, and you recognize that, one, anti-Semites are correct and that Jews are in power.
Yes.
And you have some other agenda and you're trying to convince Jews to like take up your cause.
Yeah, to pay you as them, a rear guard action or something.
But which is trying to convince them that what you want is good for them, which indicates that you fully understand that they're the one in power. You see this a lot, where you see people trying, like, you see Gentile certain movements that don't seem to have much clout, like, try and co-opt Jews. Like, we're the ones that are for Jews. Conservatives do this. Conservatives always want to pretend that they are the ones that are for Jews, and it's like, why?
I remember seeing stuff at the Center for Immigration Studies where people associated with it would be like, don't you know that Mexicans are more anti-Semitic than whites?
Arguments. Dude, I saw a speech at American Renaissance where it was the Derb. The Derb was saying that at American Renaissance like years ago. And I was like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, I see what you're doing, but it's not going to work. Like, it's not going to work. You're not going to get them off your back, and it's not going to get them to support. Oh. They obviously don't think that immigration is not in their interest. And you're never going to change their mind on that. Because Jews, the one thing you never see. You know, Nathan Coffin's always loves to talk about Jews across the spectrum, like everywhere you see. I'm like, where's a Jewish anti-immigration movement?
Well, they exist, but they only...
They focus on Muslims, dude. Like,
there's some like Mickey Kaus, who is Jewish.
Yes, Mickey Kaus is Jewish, but he's not a movement.
And,
he's one
and I
dude.
Think the guy, and I think the, one of the people at the Center for Immigration Studies, one of the top people, is a Jew.
Oh, okay.
But that's because they just want to control that sentiment.
Right. My point is, they want to make sure Center for Immigration Studies doesn't become a so-called hotbed of anti-Semitism. My point is there's no movement. There's no official Jews against immigration. There's no, you know what I mean? Yeah. There's no like actual, there's no institutional Jewish, there's Jews scattered throughout. Maybe, not even really. You can only think of Mickey Kaus and then maybe one other guy. Like, there's not even very many of them. And Mickey Kaus might have a certain amount of principle to him. But, it's not there. Like, you don't see it.
No.
And so that's one thing where it's, like, across the board. And generally speaking, right, you know, Ben Shapiro is very pro-immigration, as is all the leftist Jews. So it's like...
Well, my thing is, if you're a conservative giving Jews advice, well, they're in power. So
what do they need your advice for?
What do they need your advice for? They're in power, and you're pussy begging them for a scrap of clout and power yourself.
Right. Yeah,
what
no,
do they
it's,
need to take
it's,
your advice
it's
for?
Pathetic. They already hate you, and they're not going to like stop. It's literally like the white conservative is like, Jews, no. Don't you see? All these brown people, they're anti-Semitic. I love Israel so much. And it's like, dude, do you get any respect? Like, one of the most, you know, Jews themselves always tell you, oh, these white evangelicals, which is a dwindling, very rapidly dwindling segment of the American population, which they love. And again, when do Jews bring up American white evangelicals? It's only one context. It's when people are mad about support for Israel.
Yeah.
And Jews just scapegoat the white evangelicals, who are a movement that was completely, I mean, we've gone into the history of this before with the Schofield Bible and everything, a movement that was invented by Jews, it was created by Jews.
Yeah.
And all those televangelists, all those preachers, they all took Zionist money explicitly. Oftentimes it's very...
Well, they're, you know, when it comes to support for Israel, this is something that I'm writing about in this article, is that there's an intellectual, a Marxist intellectual from Israel, named Moshe Pastone. And he specializes in left-wing anti-Semitism. So he's a so-called Marxist that is all about stamping out left-wing anti-Semitism. So anyway, long story short, down in Brooklyn, where all the intellectual, the Jewish, young Jewish intellectuals are, they are all adepts of Moshe Pastone. You look at some of this new critical race theory stuff coming out from these yids, and it's all quoting him. And anyway, his main point, he was the inspiration for a group called the Anti-Germans in Germany. And actually, Antifa in Germany, you ever see those Antifa pictures where they're waving Israeli flags and they say Antifa means solidarity with Israel?
Yes. I thought that was like a troll at first, but apparently.
No. That's a real group. It's called the Anti-Germans, and it is, of course, created by a Jew. And it's an Antifa group that is pro-Israel, pro-American government, pro-war. They supported the Iraq War.
They're like saying the quiet part out loud.
Yes, but they're also anti-white, and they're very anti-German, as their name says. What they're doing with these new Frankfurt School Jews are doing is they're taking that anti-German ideology of Antifa in Europe and bringing it to America.
Yeah.
So instead of anti-German, it's just anti-white.
Well, why? But think about this, though. Why in Germany? It's illegal to say you're anti-Jewish, but you can literally have a group calling itself anti-German. It's like,
and every
come
year
on
they
now.
They had a Dresden march not long ago, and every year when the Germans do the march commemorating the attack on Dresden, the anti-Germans go out saying, "Thank God for the bombs. The Krauts deserved it."
I mean, that's unbelievable to me. That is absolutely wretched.
That's the psychotic Jews that run that group. And there's some German status seekers that have kind of jumped on board with that. And basically the anti-Germans were created after the Baader-Meinhof gang hijacked the Israeli jet. I don't know if you know the story. They hijacked an Israeli jet and they held all the Jews hostage. And this is a communist group. This is a left-wing communist group. And so, like, what would happen is that all these Jewish intellectuals start coming out and say, "See, the Germans never changed. Even the left-wing Germans want to kill Jews." And that's when the anti-German movement took off. Yeah. Now, this philosophy was quite marginal in America. But with the rise of Antifa, it's very much tied to Antifa specifically. It's not – there's no anti-German political party. They're not a major part of Die Linke or the Social Democrats or anything. It's purely an Antifa-associated ideology. And they are bringing this ideology to match the rise of Antifa in the United States. They're bringing it, and they're just erasing German and adding white.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Soon, you actually – it's not beyond belief – to think that soon you will see anarchists marching with Israeli flags calling themselves the anti-whites.
Yeah, I mean –
That's coming. That's coming.
Yeah, I mean it took a long time for – also real quick, we're not taking calls right now. I see a lot of people in the comments are asking about that. Sorry, guys. We're just doing the show live because we felt like just doing this. Maybe later, but I kind of doubt it actually. I think we're just going to do the show. So – but yeah, I mean, it took them a while to get – I mean, think about just on its face, like the sheer chutzpah of calling yourself the anti-Germans and being in Germany. It's just – it's absurd that it should even be allowed. But there it is. And so, yeah, it would be – right now, anti-white feels like – it's like a little bit of kryptonite for them because when you say it, they don't have a good defense against it. And it will actually activate other whites who are like, "Oh, yeah, you know what? You know, it is anti-white," you know, because they never – they can't really put – words to what they experience constantly, which is themselves getting shit on all the time. And part of the problem is that not their religion, not their race. They owe, and people, one of the reasons, frankly, conservatives are so dumb, and it's not that they're bad people or it's like they latch on to something that is something they think will score them like clout worthy oppression points, because that's seemingly how you gain power and influence in America, is by posing as an oppressed group. And but really, like, those that do that they're not oppressed, they're using that as a cudgel against everyone else. But they try to latch onto this because they're like, okay, this is how we see power operates. and we just, oh, we're doing, oh, it's that everybody hates Christians. Everyone hates everyone hates conservatives. Everyone hates ordinary.
They're ordinary pagans.
I mean, the pagan, that was that. Well, see, that was the guy literally not saying Jew because he knows. Like, that guy is not. I mean, why would you say pagan journalist? I mean, name me a pagan journalist. I mean, that's absurd. Like,
I was cracking up when you were talking about the Druids with the New York Times press pass.
Yeah. It's like, who are these pagan journalists? I want to name a single pagan journalist. Is Josh Feldberg like a pagan? You know, I mean, I mean, maybe if you, again, I'm sure that there's probably some types of Christians that will like classify Jews as like a type of pagan, I guess. I don't think, I mean, it seems like that's wrong, but it doesn't matter because that's not the issue. The issue isn't their paganism. Like, yeah. anyway, but this is how it works. And Jews are always out there, like Jews, like Ben Shapiro is probably the worst one, to give all the wrong talking points to you, to take your sense that like everyone in the country is shitting on you, that your way of life is slipping away from you, all your values are being undermined, your children are being taken from you, and here, oh, it's because you are, you know why they hate you, Goyim? It's because you're so pro-Israel.
Yeah.
Because you're such a friend to the Jew. Yeah. That is why the left hates you. I mean, this like left is the real anti-Semites. It's so such garbage. So
to be fair, though, the left is doing that now, too.
Yes.
If you look at some of the prominent intellectuals of the Antifa left, people like Spencer Sunshine, people like Alexander Reed Ross. You know, we talked about him before.
Well, those are actual Jews, though. I mean, those are Jews themselves.
They're Jews, and they're working with the Daily Beast, which is a neocon. If you look at their foreign policy analysis,
it's neoconservative.
I mean, I know who the editors at the Daily Beast are. They are known neoconservatives, including neoconservatives that were aggressive promoters of the Iraq war, people that were in AIPAC.
Is it recently still run by that Siegel family, or did they?
Yes, they're still the managing editors along with Noah Schachtman. I think that's his name.
Noah Schachtman is a brutal neocon.
Like the Daily Beast is a total neocon publication.
It's the anti-Germans.
It's the anti-Germans. And you have these anarchists writing for them now.
Yeah.
And you don't see any like disputes over that. Like, hey, why are you writing for a neocon publication?
Yeah.
Because the Daily Beast is interesting because on the one hand, it's neocon. But on the other hand, it's also woke on racial stuff.
It's woke anti-white neoconservatism. It's literally the most odious ideology possible.
Yeah. And so I'm starting to see that combination of beliefs starting to take hold in the anarchist movement in America, and it's specifically anarchists that are promoting this stuff. I've seen, actually, you know, Max Blumenthal is Jewish too, but he's criticized him himself, and he calls them the anarcho-neocons.
Yeah.
And basically, you know them when you see them.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are really into doxing people. They're into like attacking people for being Nazbol. I see them calling people Duganists. Like, that's like if someone's calling someone a Duganist, left like, or right.
Where are you?
That's
getting
like
that
a shill. That's a shill. Yeah, that's a shill.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, it really goes. And it's also another thing: class reductionism. They really hate what they call class reductionism, which is just a classical interpretation of Marxism that puts workers' interests over identity politics.
Right, which means like they're not interested in advocating for workers.
But that's the Frankfurt School. I mean, if you look at Herbert Marcuse, he basically said the same thing. I mean, if you were to take Adorno, Horkheimer, and Marcuse and get one clear like theory out of them, like in a few sentences, kind of condense what they were saying. They're known for being pessimists, right? Cultural pessimists, staring into the abyss and so on. Basically, what they're saying about capitalism is that the Frankfurt School says that capitalism is this kind of resilient system, that it's actually very hard to overthrow it. And so instead of worrying your beautiful mind with overthrowing capitalism, focus more on enlightening people on race and gender. And that kind of borrows from Gramsci, who's not a Jew. But if you want to understand where that thinking comes from on the left, it comes from the 1920s and 30s. The reason Gramsci in Italy, the reason he said similar things, he was kind of one of the early pioneers of that in a sense, is he was butthurt because he was part of this communist movement that seemed to be rising, and then Mussolini just takes the economics of socialism. Yeah. With he gets all these like dissident trade unionists and starts a fascist party, and combines the economics with patriotism and borders and traditional family values, and defeats the communists.
Yeah,
and so Gramsci is sitting in prison after that happens, and he's like, "Well, what happened is that the workers, you can't have a workers' revolution unless you first change the culture of the workers and you enlighten." Right.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, this is just what Marxists have become since the experience of the 20s and 30s is trying to convince proletarians of their bourgeois elitist mindset, their cosmopolitan bourgeois elitist mindset. And it's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. And this is something that's so funny because and so what they do, what they've done is like and Christian Exu was doing this when people would accuse him of basically using the class relationships of capitalism to destroy working class people that are far less powerful than him, far less represented than him. I mean, basically, one of our main critiques of what those guys do, and he's just like, yeah, implying that like fascists are workers. It's like, well, what's their relationship to capital?
Right.
Like, let's be honest. What is someone who's someone that you're doxing? And whose life you're destroying, which is what you say you do. You brag that you get people fired and not just fired, but dehomed, like kicked out of their house.
Yeah,
that's what he's bragging. So you're an inhuman monster. And what is it? What is the relationship to capital of the person that you're doing this? Are they an owner? Are they someone who has a relationship?
If you get them kicked out of their house or fired, then clearly they're not.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's like they have no. Do they have access to state power? Do they have access to capital? No, they have neither of these things. Therefore, they are workers. They are proletariat, according to the Marxist definition, and frankly, according to any common sense definition. Yeah. Like, if your life and your livelihood depends on your ability to work for capital for a living,
fill out a W-2.
Yeah, you're a 1095 even, you know. I mean, one way, either one, but like, you know, if you're that, and then you're not even if you make, you know, over $100,000, like I understand. One of the things Marxists always talk about is talking about the middle class. Everyone talks about the middle class in America. The middle class are just high income workers.
Yeah, they're still people, rich working class.
Yeah, they're still people. They just make good. They make high salaries. They're still totally living on credit.
Yeah, the relations are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, in many cases, they're more precarious because they have built up these false lifestyles around having and appearing to have a lot of money and having a lot of credit. And so that they're actually very easy for Jews to manipulate because of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have.
Why do you think those are the people making more than 100,000 are oftentimes the most woke of all?
Yeah. They're definitely. I mean, wokeness does not extend beneath the upper middle class. OK, it just doesn't. And whites that are in that milieu are woke because they're signaling their status and their trustworthiness to the powerful so they can maintain. This is what we always said. Like, I reject the idea that wokeness and anti-whiteness amongst upper-middle-class whites, or as we call them, oven-middle-class whites, I reject the idea that they do this because they hate whites or they do this because they have some pathology that they hate them. No. In fact, they are narcissists. They want you to think they're great people, and they want Jews to think they're great people so that they continue to have their high-class lifestyle. They continue to have a big house and two cars and the whole lifestyle.
They're actually worse than that. They're traitors. They're race traitors, the people that do that.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no. But again, their motivation is purely material. Like they do this because they have a high, they have the appearance of status, and they have the monetary rewards, at least on the surface. Now underneath, they're all aching under mountains of debt, but like something you complain about a lot. But it's like, you notice how Jews don't ever come to your rescue in that one? All these people, it's like all these upper middle class people, they still bitch about their college debt and their student loans and then all the mortgage and like the car notes and like God knows how many loans these people are suffering on there. And it's like, who do you owe that money to? We owe it to Jews. And do they ever come to your help? No. Do they ever say, you know what, thanks for helping us defeat fascism. Here's let's cancel your debt. No, never. Never.
Well, you know what's so dangerous about the Frankfurt School, and it's been said before, but if you really want to like attribute the modern state of our race and civilization to something, it's the Frankfurt School. And the reason for that is that the Frankfurt School dedicated itself to destroying classical concepts of reason. So if you don't have reason, which is the foundation of Western civilization, it's a reason-based structure, right? A reason-based culture, which is why the West became the greatest civilization in the world. If that's eroded by termites, then you have the system we have now.
Yeah.
Okay? And, you know, mm-hmm. none of this would matter. I mean, the Frankfurt School would be a couple of mentally ill Jews in a room talking shit about white people, kind of isolated. The problem is, and this is something that conservative critiques of the Frankfurt School never get right, is how did the Frankfurt School go from being this eccentric, outside, like, niche philosophy to the ruling ideology of the United States of America? How did that happen? And so I remember 10 years ago, maybe, it was common for people like Glenn Beck to talk about the Frankfurt School and cultural Marxism and so on.
Yeah.
But they never tell you why or how this became the dominant ideology. And the answer to that is Jewish control of the media and Jewish control of academia and Jewish control of finance.
Yeah.
They simply put a ton of money behind these ideas. Okay, and so without a kind of complete Jewish analysis, I mean, this is what I was talking to someone about today. I was like, you know, these Jews, they're literally hundreds and if not thousands of Jews sitting doing this for a living. They sit around plotting the demise of the white race. That's all they do. That's what they do for a living. They have tons of money to do. So I looked at the Form 990 of the new Institute for Social Research in Brooklyn. They have almost $1 million a year that they're given.
Yeah.
So these people, they get paid $1 million a year to sit around just doing this. Now, what's the counter to that? Well, it's basically us.
Yeah, there's no one else that's going to do it.
We're the counter Institute for Social Research. It's fucking TRS. There's no one else doing this out there.
No,
we need
and
more
certainly
people
not with
to
the
figure
same,
out a way to do it.
And or people just need to amplify when we do it. People need to amplify our points to a lot of people because that's the other thing. Jews have the infrastructure to do that. But it's sort of funny when Glenn Beck and them used to say that they would always. It's funny you talk about Gramsci. They would always fall back on blaming him because he's like a non-Jew.
Yeah,
that they can name.
They don't
right?
talk about Walter Benjamin.
No.
No, they talk about Gramsci.
Sometimes they'll talk about Marcuse, but they'll never mention that he's Jewish. But yeah,
yeah,
Gramsci is
like
the most popular go-to one to attack by conservatives.
French existentialists.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, they'll blame French. They'll blame French existentialists who do have some Marxist leanings, but they say a lot of them say interesting things, like Deleuze and such. He says a lot of very interesting things.
Right.
I don't like hate that guy. Now he's certainly not like he would not be horrified to classify himself as like one of us, but he does say a lot of interesting things about media control and stuff like that. Like guys like that have some interesting characteristics to them. But like that's who they always go after. They go after like Gramsci and then like French. Never like, oh no, these are actually Jews. Overwhelmingly, these people are Jews. What is it that Adam Curtis calls them? Immigrant psychiatrists? Like,
I mean, I watched four parts. I didn't see part five yet, but that's a fantastic. It's just so great to see something that is actually thoughtful and insightful for once.
Well, Adam Curtis is like the only guy. I got to confess, I've only seen Century of the Self. I haven't even seen Hypernormalization, and I haven't watched this new one yet. But I did see a thread, and I did talk about yesterday about Rachman and Michael X and that whole crazy story that was going on there, where like basically this Jew Rachman gets this black activist guy who's also a pimp and a drug dealer and a lunatic to collect rent for him, and he gives him space in his slums. His slumlord Jew brings all these blacks into Britain. He gives him space to just create this black communist totally festering this brutally disgusting anti-white sentiment. It becomes popular and cool for stars like John Lennon and stuff to go hang out with these people.
Yeah.
But then when they get above their, they get a little bit above their pay grade, and they put like a dog collar on a Jew and like ran him around the room, and then, oh, that's the end of that.
I was cracking up at his background story where he got – first, he got run out of Nazi Germany, so he flees to the Soviet Union. Then the Soviets chase Ruckman out.
Well, it's also like Ruckman also –
he's in Britain, and there's like the, there's stock footage of an Anglo, like some journalist, Anglo journalist, being like, oh, he was quite the unpleasant man.
Yeah.
Really, truly evil.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, they made a, they named a word after him, and it's also funny that he had a biographer write a biography of him, who he claimed the guy was part of the Polish resistance, but like it's such an obviously bullshit claim that like no one,
straight up, he looks like the fucking Jew sitting on the bag of money from Der Sturmer.
Yeah, he like, literally looks like it's really funny, but of course he was cultivating in his slums in Notting Hill in London, where he owned like 100 slum buildings. He was cultivating this Michael Freitas or Michael X character who wasn't really like Malcolm X at all, because I mean
the story that they said was that he got the name because Malcolm X visited England and Freitas was hosting him or traveling with him, and when they went to the hotel, the hotel clerk said, "Oh, you're Malcolm X. What about you? Oh, you must be Michael X." You know?
Yeah.
And he just kept that name.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And basically what it was is he was just a mentally ill person.
He was just a lunatic, yeah.
Yeah. And did you see the part where the black girl is like, you know, Michael never really gave a fuck about black people. All he did is like extort us.
Well, yeah, because, you know, he basically got co-opted by Rackman early. He did it
because his mom was white. That's what she said.
Well, yeah, the guy is light-skinned, but he also, like, he clearly... he was co-opted by Rackman very early. Like, just he was a rent collector. The dude was a rent collector for Rackman. And criminal. Then at the same time, he was also, and then in return for that, he was allowed to do drugs and to sell drugs and pimp people inside these projects, and then the whole thing. And he ended up, of course, saying he put this dog collar on a Jew. That's like the fun. John Lennon, like, paid for this guy to get out of jail on that. Whereas he got bail. He got bail on that. But it's funny because like everyone knew that this stuff was going on at the Black House, which is the name of his little so-called Black Power commune in London. Everyone knew that all kinds of stuff was going on, and it wasn't until they went after the Jew Marvin Brown where they basically got – and Marvin Brown went there because he thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And then like he thought it would be cool to be seen with these cool, hip, young – like. It's almost like they were like they wanted blacks there to have like a black struggle in England so they could be cool like the left in America.
Well, yeah. Well, what I found very interesting about that was when the bug men started moving into the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they were like bug men from the 60s.
Yeah.
And they started moving in, and Michael X was complaining about it, like saying that like these white liberals are moving into my slum and gentrifying it, and they're you know, kind of making the same complaints in the sense that the white upper class bug men were kind of fetishizing black radicalism.
Oh yeah, they loved it.
And
yeah.
living vicariously through it. And you see that with the Black Lives Matter thing. Like all these people say, "Oh wow, all these young white people at Black Lives Matter, America's really turning the page on racism." No. Elite bourgeois types have been doing this since the 1960s.
Yeah, they've been doing it, and possibly even before. I mean, in France, they were doing it in the 1920s.
Yeah.
But it's also like – but the other thing is it's not as – frankly, despite those young bourgeois whites like coming in and like kissing Michael X's ass, like it wasn't as easy for him to run his game on them as it was on Black. Now, he can control them in certain ways. But it was like it wasn't he wanted to be a pimp and a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Like that's where his roots were. Right? Yeah. And blacks he could control a black neighborhood by doing that. But these bourgeois whites were like political.
Right.
And it was like, and sure, he could tell them what to do and he could get them to do stupid shit, humiliating stuff for fun, which is what they did to, you know, they were doing. I mean, and if you think Marvin Brown was only the one that got them in trouble because he was Jewish. They were probably putting slave collars on white people and making fun of them and having trials and shit.
You know, probably white women that Groy probably raped.
Yeah, they're probably all of them. Like, yeah.
How many mugged? I mean, all the types of things he probably did. I mean, I'm sure – I was talking to someone about this today also at those Black Lives Matter riots where there was tons of white people. Do you know how many white girls probably got raped or white people got robbed, maybe stabbed, maybe shot? And those bourgeois whites are so fanatical that they won't even – report it to the police.
Well, this was a big thing when during the refugee crisis, and where you get these white activists that would go and work in refugee camps, the women would just get raped and they won't report it, or if they do, it would come out because again, when you get raped, I guess if you're a woman, that's a very psychologically damaging experience. They can't get over it, so eventually they'll write a Medium article about it, and then it gets exposed that it happened, and then they'll parade around the fact that they didn't report it. You'd see occasionally a few years ago, you'd see these women coming out with why I didn't report my rapist, and it's wait, excuse me, well, you didn't because you didn't want it, and the reason is all the same. They don't want it to be ammo.
Let's not be too charitable to them, because the reason they don't to them. Oh, I know you're not, but I'm saying in general. The reason they don't report it is because their peers pressure them into not reporting it. They know that if they do report it and the far right takes it up, then their peers will disown them. And I know this because I wrote an article this week about do you remember the L train stop, the Morgan Avenue?
Yeah.
Okay, that's Antifa City right there.
Yep.
Okay, that is the fucking epicenter of New York City Antifa. There's no Antifa in Queens, maybe Ridgewood. But aside from that, there's no Antifa in the Bronx. There's no Antifa in Staten Island, for sure. Yeah. there is Antifa in the fancy parts of Brooklyn. And what happened was, because New York City is a fucking zoo now, outside the Morgan Avenue L train stop, a black guy
– Bushwick. I mean, that's gentrified Bushwick. That's the heart of gentrified Bushwick, yeah.
Well, a black guy attacked 11 women – in 11 separate instances because they were white at that L train stop right outside the same spot for months. He was attacking specifically what he said, light-skinned women, white women. Okay? And there's a woman called Bianca Fortis who's a liberal journalist. And if you go on her Twitter, you can see her going to Black Lives Matter rallies.
Yeah.
And she got attacked. And she posted a picture of it. She had two big black eyes, bruised all over. Totally random attack from this nigger. And basically what happened is because she's a journalist, she had a contact at the New York Times. And they wrote this whole article about it a couple weeks ago where they talked about two things. They said this man – they arrested him recently. But this man had attacked five women before her and in the same spot. And there was no warning. The police weren't investigating. No one was talking about it. There weren't any signs on the subway saying, watch out, this guy's around, and so on. And so she was like, this is crazy. And she said there's another case that this guy attacked a woman where she dialed 911 and the police just didn't come. And two other women that got attacked by this guy didn't even report it to the police. They didn't even bother. And so I look at Bianca Fortis, she took it upon herself as an empowered woman with a Y to warn people, right? And you go to her Instagram and it says, watch out, ladies. There's a man who is attacking women.
Yeah.
The Morgan Avenue L train stop. He's 5'9", he wears yellow shoes, all that, and I'm like, aren't
what's
you missing?
What's the most salient characteristic here? What's the most, what characteristic of this man, of this attacker stands out the most? What's the most obvious?
So this stupid bitch, for all her complaints, what I said in my article is that if you were to put up a flyer with a picture of the guy or a real description of him at that stop, another leftist would have ripped the flyer down because it's racist.
Okay. Yeah.
Plain and simple. The people that live in that part of Bushwick are – what I also said is that, there's still some good white working class Poles in Greenpoint, right? There's tons of bugmen there. But there's good native Poles, white working Poles, good people. You can go to Williamsburg and you'll find little Italian grandmas that still live there. But if you go to Bushwick,
yeah,
if you go to this part of Bushwick, 100% of the white-skinned people, white or Jew,
are pieces of shit. Yeah.
Anti-white scum. And then they're not just ideologically anti-white or passively anti-white. They are directly involved in anti-white media, anti-white activism, anti-white yeah. NGOs. They're anarchists. They're in anti-white art movements. So 100% of the people that live in that part of Bushwick get exactly what they fucking deserve.
Yeah, no, I don't care about it at all. And it's partly because, you know, Bushwick was never – there was never much of an ethnic white neighborhood there. Or no. At least there not for a very long time. So there's not even any remnants of it like in those other neighborhoods. It was a Dominican, Puerto Rican, black neighborhood always. And so it's like there's not really there's no remnants of an ethnic white community there. It's also why it's frankly there's not even a remnant of like nice anything nice there. It's just a shithole.
Yeah, it's a cesspool.
Shithole up and down. There's a few places out on one of the what's that main street that goes down Bushwick Avenue. There's a few old mansions there, probably from a very, very long time ago, like 100 years ago, but they're all decrepit and falling down and filled with, like, you know, blacks doing drugs and shit. So
it's a fucking shithole. If you live there, really you're terrible. A real. If you're white and you live there, you're a real asshole.
Yeah,
and I mean, just you really go of out of your there. Way.
Yeah,
and so you know that's the thing. Like the problem here is that if Bianca Fortis had accurately described her assailant, her own friends would have canceled her.
Yes,
her own peer.
Oh yeah, yeah. She would have gotten
social circle would have taken her to task for it.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. And now in New York, like there's tons – like you don't know. Like there's tons of black on white violence in New York City. And guess who it's going to impact the most? It's these people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't bother me at all. I don't lose any sleep over it. And you know, it also shows why gentrification is a Jewish project. And I used to see like certain types of like neo-reactionaries and such would always be like, well, isn't it great? Isn't gentrification great? It shows how like the power, because again, these people are all butt goys of like finance and shit. Like, isn't it great how the power of finance can be used? Like they're like, forget about activism. Let's not like, that's the kind of an NRX point of view. Like don't do activism. Don't do social pressure. Just like get money. And basically it's basically a very Jewish thing. But even some of the white people that had gotten involved in it early before they got like smart, but they smartened up and realized it was just another Jewish thing, would be like, oh yeah, it's, you know, gentrification. Look, it's like whites reclaiming cities. Like, not really, because they're not reclaiming anything, because they're all paying rent to a Jewish, some Orthodox Jew, some Chabad Lubavitch Jew.
Yeah.
You know,
making a killing.
Yeah, who's just like absolutely cleaning
living
up on
roach infested.
And on top of that, though, what does it do? Because you're not raising a family. Yeah. You're not making that a nice place. You're going there to slum it. Literally, in like some shitty apartment, some like, now actually they're starting to build fancy apartments there because some of
they're pissed off because of course all these same hipsters
Black people Lives can't Matter afford to live in those buildings. Yeah,
well, no, all the same hipsters that were doing Black Lives Matter over the summer, they're going back to Idaho, like they're going back to fucking Ohio.
Yeah,
they don't want to stay there because it's fucking dangerous. And they'll make excuses that, oh, it's COVID. I don't feel safe. People don't wear enough masks and this and that.
Get out of here.
The subway sucks. No, it's because like niggers are just off the
leash.
There's
like blacks and Dominicans like off the just off the
They're
chain
off
there.
The leash. I mean, they are off the fucking leash. I saw a video the other day in New York City, a dude just walking down like a main street in Brooklyn with an AR-15. I mean, like, it's just – I mean, this is the city they wanted, and you know what's funny?
Call the cops! All you fucking white hipsters and Jew hipsters that live there and listen to rap music all the time. Call the fucking cops on him.
Well, nothing, dude. But like, I can't even get personally mad at the blacks for this because when they're
responding to the incentives that they're given.
No, it's not just that. But when the bug men were going out there calling for slashing the NYPD's budget, and they cut it by $1 billion. That's a lot of money. Yeah. And they disbanded the anti-crime unit. So the anti-crime unit was basically the guys that are plain clothes, and their job is to get guns off the street.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually like a big Irish guy in a do-rag. Like, he's not fooling anyone, but they kind of get a little more leeway and they get into the thick of it and they arrest people for having illegal guns. So anyway, they disbanded that whole fucking unit. And the black people, like Eric Adams, who's the Brooklyn Borough president, he's a black guy. He said his constituents were begging the city, begging Mayor de Blasio not to do it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, yo, if you do this, they're just going to shoot everyone. And that's exactly what happened. The people that made the decision to disband the anti-crime unit, to cut the funding of the NYPD, it was hipster, Antifa, overwhelmingly white and Jewish leftists, and Mayor Bill de Blasio. There were hardly any blacks involved in the Black Lives Matter movement over the summer in New York. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Now, there were black looters and stuff, but that they weren't in the political.
Yeah, they're just taking advantage of the situation. Yeah.
So, like, you can't even blame blacks for this. I mean, you can blame their criminals and stuff, but they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the basic normal racial observations here. Once you understand the black tendencies, like how blacks are kind of by nature, then you can kind of predict where things will go. But like, they're not like agents in this. Like the agents are the white and Jewish activists. Really the Jewish and their white toadies.
Yes.
That are doing this stuff. And that's another problem with sometimes when people are like get quote unquote like woke from our perspective to race, they start to, if you go like too hard with just like black people genetics, they're dumb or whatever. Yeah. It's like, yeah, okay, you know, kind of like you don't really need to. I mean, look, I get that it's hard for a lot of people to vocalize that and to say that because they're just trained not to ever see it or acknowledge it or say anything about it. And whites that don't live around blacks very much, like it's particularly hard because they only see blacks on TV and they look like nice people or whatever. But like, it's not really the right direction to go because by nature, white people are just like a kind of wary of blacks and don't really want to live around them. And like, you wouldn't have to train, you don't need to like train white people to not have that. In fact, the government and Jews invest like billions of dollars in making sure that whites and blacks are living near each other. It's like very big, expensive and time consuming project for them. They have to continually come out with propaganda to convince people and then use government money and influence to make sure that the low-income housing and
the point I'm getting at here is the actual majority, like it might be a small majority, but the majority of black people are actually against taking the police out of their neighborhood.
Right.
So they're not making this decision. Like there's an article about this. Tony Herbert, an activist in New York's black community, agreed and lamented the rise in violence, criticizing New York officials for their failure to address the situation. The guns keep going off. Now we got a 1-year-old, and the blood is on the hands of the mayor and the state legislature.
Yeah, and it's
so
like
these people, like, you know, there's a black dude in Philadelphia right now who's been on a hunger strike. No media will give him any attention.
Right.
He's on a hunger strike, begging the fucking Irishman mayor to do something. You know, the Soros funded mayor and the Jew DA.
Yeah.
To stop releasing criminals.
And like, the funny thing is,
long in prison. Stop releasing.
Now, if that dude did a hunger strike to end white supremacy, do you know how many CNN cameras would be in his face?
Oh yeah,
and Fox News too. Like everybody would be like wanting to hear what he had to say, and it's
Rand Paul would be going up to him, and be like, "Oh, another Detroit Republican."
Yes, Detroit Republican. But yeah, I mean, that just shows you, like, again, it's like this isn't for you blacks, and you know, what's funny is again, and now what I want to talk about was this Mark Lamont Hill thing with Ben Shapiro, because this kind of fits into the whole thing we're talking about here. So we have Mark Lamont Hill, who's a black guy. He's like left-wing black guy. He's very pro-Palestine and pro-BDS, and he's a professor at Temple, which they couldn't get him fired from because he
They hate him.
The Jews hate this guy. But and look, I'm sure he probably says anti-white stuff, but he does a lot of stuff I agree with, to be honest with you. I've actually never – Jews don't publicize
– the thing is, listen, they're all going to say the anti-white stuff. The way you can ferret out the real niggers from the front niggers is the real niggers, unlike, say, Clyburn or some Democrat Black Caucus guy.
Fucking,
will be
what's
like,
his
yo,
name?
I hate Israel too.
What's his name? Coates, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a total house.
Yes,
fucking
MD
house.
Ibrahim.
He's a Shabbos nigger. We should start using that too.
Yes.
He's a fucking Shabbos nigger.
Yeah, we could talk about that.
You're not even a house nigger.
I actually have an article about this on the site, actually, about the ADL. I mean, last year, or rather last summer, the ADL leaked a memo. Someone leaked an ADL memo where they're like quietly behind the scenes planning to fully consolidate power over Black Lives Matter.
Yeah,
and the main complaint they had was that they're not pro-Israel.
Yes,
and so what they're doing now is they're trying to get Black celebrities, especially like washed up ones or has-beens like Terry Crews or people like that, to join this thing called the Black Jewish Entertainment Alliance. So basically what it is that these are like Uncle Toms that are trying to – it's – by the way, 90% of the members are Jewish entertainment industry executives.
Yeah, so and these, the Blacks that sign up for it are like, yeah, like this is where clearly there's money here or something, or there's clout.
Well,
and,
you know who the face of this alliance is?
Who?
Nick Cannon.
So they got wow, they got him under control, didn't they?
Well, let's just inform you on this. So, you know, Nick Cannon got fired in July, right?
Yeah.
He got his job back 4 days after this group went public.
Oh, wow, interesting.
And this, it's basically, it was created by the ADL.
Yes.
This organization. And the way you know is that when you go on their website and go black, it's called Black Jewish Entertainment Alliance. And you go on their website and it says, we are here together, blacks and Jews, to make a statement about how anti-Semitism is just as wrong as racism. And Jews are just as oppressed as blacks and so on. Ah. And then you go on the resources section and it's like all Holocaust shit and the ADL is linked. So it's clearly an ADL operation to control black.
Yeah, well, they basically, because they had a bit of a problem over the summer with Nick Cannon and with Ice Cube and others who were using their riding, piggybacking on Black Lives Matter's ascendancy and using their own celebrity fame and just making statements that were, you know, not the Jews didn't like. And of course they managed to control it a little bit. Don't be surprised if Ice Cube signs up for this fucking thing. Although maybe he won't, I don't know.
But no, I don't think he will.
He's a little bit too, he doesn't really need the money, and
he's
too,
already made his money,
But it's also be kind of humiliating for him to do it after everything that happened. But like they were having problems with them because it was very difficult for Jews to be like canceling blacks right in the middle of like the heat of the Black Lives Matter summer, right? It was kind of a difficult thing. Now they did kind of cancel Nick Cannon, and they got people to push back on Ice Cube and such, but it created a conversation that they didn't want to be having. They didn't want to be having that conversation in the middle of like white supremacy, Black Lives Matter. Yep. Like they just didn't want to have that. And now a couple years ago, this guy Mark Lamont Hill, who works for Temple, they fired him from CNN because he had been recorded at a Palestine protest saying from the river to the sea, which, you know, if you know anything about geography, I mean, Israel is basically between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. That basically means like no more Israel. That's what they're saying. And look, there's nothing wrong with that sentiment, in my opinion, because Israel as it exists now is this Zionist construct as it exists now. It's inherently genocidal to Palestinians. I mean, this is what they always say.
Well, why can't they share a country with them?
Right. Why can't they make it, instead of a Jewish state, why can't you have a democratic country for Jews and Arabs?
Yeah.
I mean, that is literally what they tell everyone else in the world to do.
Like, completely off the table that even suggesting it gets you fired from CNN.
Well, if you suggest it, if Jews jump in and immediately say, well, why do you hate Jews? I'm like, okay, so you're saying that for me to suggest that you have a biracial state, Jews and Arabs together in one state is democratic, that is hatred of Jews? Well, then what is it when you fucking promote immigration into, like, almost entirely white countries? Where there's not even a history where, like, where whites aren't even the ones that, like, moved in and took over. Now, you could say, oh, whites did it in North America, but let's be honest, like, there was very few Indians here.
And well, that's also besides the point.
It's beside the point.
Go make a indigenous people's rights appeal in Europe.
In Europe. No, it's literally white people, like, indigenous people means non-whites in the Jewish way the word is used. I mean, they never talk about whites as indigenous anywhere, because whites just are inherently never supposed to be able to tap into any of the constructs they built up about how you use grievance. Because, again, that's the culture that Jews want to make sure that they always dominate and never let it come back up to challenge them again.
That's a critical race theory culture of the Frankfurt School, which subjects all objective reason in a kind of warped Nietzschean way of relativism. It's all relative. And which is why it's kind of wrong. I agree with Keith Woods and others when they say it's wrong to call it Marxism, because Marxism is the discussion of materialism, which is matter, right? How matter interacts with other matter, while idealism is consciousness, right? So what the Frankfurt School does is it kind of combines the worst of both in calling all ideas of consistency, of rational consistency, a tool of white supremacist oppression.
Right.
And it instead it replaces reason with subjective experiences. So that's how you get the society.
But even so, it excludes the subjective experiences of whites.
Well, like, yeah,
it, it, the analysis
oppressor
I mean, but again, that's you asking it to be rational and consistent, right, at least not.
You know, people brought this up to the Frankfurt School, and you know how they always responded? Typical fucking Jews. The way they responded to these critiques is to psychoanalyze the person making the critique. They never someone is making a philosophical critique of your philosophy, and then you do the weaselly Jew thing of changing the goalposts. Now we're talking about psychology.
Yeah, well,
and
why now
you're neurotic.
Put you on, and they do this all the time. And it's not just even the front. I mean, they do it in every day, like on Twitter. They do it. Like if you make a critique of Jews, they never answer it.
Anything they believe.
And it's about like, oh, your father was mean to you, or your mother abandoned you,
or you're guilty of an ism.
Yeah, like there's
you're guilty of a phobia, George Weinberg.
Yeah, like the only and of course the using the terms phobia to talk about a desire to not have to deal with homosexuals and such. And it's interesting, but I wanted to read
stupid that is. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to read this Daily Wire article because there's a lot of really interesting stuff in this. And it touches on a lot of stuff that just shows what it's trying to do is, so Mark Lamont Hill, so I'll just read it. So it's February 6th. Democratic Socialists of America hosted an online panel discussion titled DSA, BDS, and Palestine Solidarity. One of the panelists was Mark Lamont Hill, a professor of media studies and urban education at Temple University, an outspoken Black Lives Matter activist. It's not actually true. He was actually pretty well sidelined by Black Lives Matter, and they're probably, I mean, they're including him here as a bit of a token. He's a bit of a token here, even with the DSA, who is not going to go in this direction.
No.
Who admitted that one of the explicit goals of the Black Lives Matter movement was to embrace BDS and dismantle the Jewish state of Israel. Now, Mark Lamont Hill does not speak for Black Lives Matter in any way. He doesn't. Jonathan Greenblatt has more claim to speaking for Black Lives Matter than Mark Lamont Hill. Mark Lamont Hill is a bit of a fringe character, and he was included in this BDS panel probably due to some internal pressure or something, or just to get him to deal with them. I mean, he's not speaking for Black Lives Matter. He doesn't have any leadership position in Black Lives Matter.
Here's an interesting little anecdote about him.
Yeah.
Is that he wrote an article. Now, Sean King is the one that gets all the money from Dustin Moskowitz. Like, he's told Sean King was astroturfed by Jews.
Yeah.
And Mark Lamont Hill actually exposed Sean King as basically a crook. Like, he's stealing from all these, like, PACs and donate. Like, he's just stealing for himself.
Right.
And Mark Lamont Hill actually kind of almost canceled Sean King, in a sense.
Well, Sean King would be running fun every time some incident that he could characterize as anti-black, even though it almost never was. I mean, the one case where he blamed a white guy for shooting that little black girl, and it turned out it was a black guy that did it.
He raised
like a lot of money based on that. And that was just one of the most glaring examples. But yeah, anyway, so they don't like Mark Lamont Hill. My point is that, like, Ben Shapiro's, I don't know who wrote this article, it doesn't really, it's effectively Ben Shapiro, if it's on the Daily Wire. His characterization of Lamont Hill as leading Black Lives, it's not true. Like, the guy doesn't actually have any real standing in that movement. Again, it's Black Lives Matter has $12 billion.
He does have standing.
He's not speaking for the movement, though.
He does, but the problem is that there's a ton of groups claiming they represent Black Lives Matter. And right. So he just gets muffled out by the many.
Well,
many
my question is, though, like, what does he actually control? He doesn't really control anything. He's just a voice. He's on a DSA panel. He doesn't even control the DSA. He can't set the agenda for any organization or Black Lives Matter affiliated organization. He can't sit down as a guy on a board anywhere or on a steering committee or anything and say, this is what we want to do. He's just saying aspirational stuff about what he thinks he'd like to see Black Lives Matter do.
Yeah.
And what he says is, this generation of activists says, no, let's defund, let's abolish, let's imagine new possibilities. And one of the possibilities that they've imagined is a world where that is anti-imperialist. They don't want to just... Now, here's something he's... This is very accurate, astute observation of Jews, if only he had the balls to just say this was Jews. I mean, he might as well at this point, because everybody that's oppressing him and telling him to shut up is a Jew.
Yeah.
Or like a butt goy, a white butt goy.
I mean, that's why they're careful not to push him too far out, because if he does, just push him in the arms of Farrakhan.
Right, and again, he'll also... They also don't like the fact that, you know, when you give blacks clout, when you make every white person, or you make it seem through the media that things that blacks say are, like, particularly wise and smart and, like, soulful or whatever it is that they want to, you know. Although they don't talk about, you remember they used to talk about blacks having soul, now they just talk about them having bodies? What happened to blacks? What happened to blacks having souls? They're just bodies now. That's kind of fucking dehumanizing. But anyway, he says they don't want to just nation build, they want to world make. This is exactly what Zionists are doing.
Yeah.
So he continued, and so Black Lives Matter very explicitly is talking about the dismantling of the Zionist project, dismantling of a settler colonial project, and very explicitly embracing BDS on these grounds. Now, I'm sure that's something he would like to happen, but I really haven't seen much actual alliances between Black Lives Matter and BDS. And with $12 billion
There are some there is an alliance to some degree between that.
You don't see it very much, though.
It's not front and center. And again, I'll go. The problem is the Jewish intellectuals that are kind of defining Black Lives Matter for blacks.
Well, not just the Jewish financiers.
And those two.
Because, like I said, $12 billion for Black Lives Matter and affiliated organizations, and it's being administered by people like Susan Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Like sitting atop like some like Morningstar.
Oh, they got in front of that real fast.
Oh yeah, boy, they managed to drown that one out. Yeah, because the it's like, here's an actual terrorist. literally smuggling bombs and Uzis and like all kinds of shit. Yeah. Anyway, so here, check this out though. This is so interesting because everything now what Mark Lamont Hill is doing, I mean, a lot of these things that he's accusing Israel of are like classic things that Jews, it's like a language that Jews have developed themselves in order to attack white societies, particularly like in America.
I mean, that's exactly what it is, and that's the contradiction they
have.
This
is the problem. The problem is, though, that Israel is a settler, I mean, you could say colony, but it's like, well, they're a colony of what? Like, they are the colonizer. Who are they? You think of a colony, it's like, okay, a nation wants to expand its borders, so it sends settlers out to settle a piece of land and become part of that larger state or that nation. But Israel isn't that, because it's not a colony of the United States. If anything, the opposite is true.
Yeah.
So Israel is like the colonizing state, and the United States is one of its colonies. And they colonize through media and financial control. That's how Jews colonize. And then in Israel, they're just doing actual... Like, we're just taking this land by force, and they're not, you know, they use the financial
and
media
you know
control
what's right.
elsewhere
right.
to do that.
You're right that the whole thing of building up the clout of blacks is very effective for white liberals. And you'll notice that most of the discussion of Lamont Hill's anti-Israel comments is happening in either conservative media or Israeli media.
Right.
Very they don't, little. They don't. You don't see it in this on CNN. You don't see it in the New York.
Well, you don't see Lamont Hill on CNN because they fired him 2 years ago.
Well, I mean, even discussion in a negative way.
Yeah, they're not even criticizing it because how do you criticize it? That's the problem.
He's working for Al Jazeera now.
And well, this is the other problem that they have is this goes back to the idea of the left wing anti-Semitism, because it's not just the blacks; it's the clout of left wing anti-racist movements. So when you go after Israel using anti-racist rhetoric, which actually applies.
Yeah.
And anti-colonial rhetoric, post-colonial rhetoric, all these things that they've taught, that Jews have taught leftists and people of color how to talk to attack white people is very, very easily. It's literally a projection of what they're doing in Israel. It's a total projection of exactly what they're doing. It's just like white privilege is a projection of Jewish privilege. It's literally it's literally how the Jewish community operates. Like, Jews have this special privilege. By virtue of their race, they have access to resources and privileges that no one else can have. They are literally gifted from birth, not just with money.
Yeah, it's like we were talking about last week, is that like there used to be in the 1960s, like some of those Frankfurt School Jews, they grew up in homes where their father was a tailor and their mother was like a homemaker and stuff. Today, there isn't a single Jew that's in politics that didn't grow up with a fucking silver spoon in his mouth.
Right. And even so, those Jews still like we're talking about Peter Rackman, like Rackman, his father was some like he was like a cobbler. I don't think he was even that much. His father did something like had a store or something like that, a shop in Poland. Right. And then he suddenly has like 100 slums in London, you know, the next generation. So
And
but in any case, of course, so how did he get that though? It wasn't because he's a hardworking entrepreneur. It's because he was plugged into a pre-existing Jewish financial real estate community.
Yeah.
But these Jews, they born and they it's not just a born silver spoon in their mouth. It's access. It's contacts. It's access. You know, I was listening to, I know it was a digression, but you know, we played that Jim Cramer audio where he talked about how they play the stock market to always benefit hedge funds and such. There's another interview with him on the same show where he was talking to this real, like this real Jewy looking dude, this real rat like Jewy looking guy, young Jew. And the guy was like, what do you think, Jim Cramer? Is someone just starting out in the market? So you just graduated from college and how do you start out? He's like, well, you want to chat all your networks. And he's not talking to white people when he says this. He's like, where did you go to school? He's like, find the alumni list of your school and write them all a letter. See if they'll give you a job. He's like, you know, and like he's basically talking to young Jews that want to get into finance, how to tap into all the Jewish networks of Wall Street and finance and get yourself a cushy job at a Wall
like
Street.
Just go to your local Rosh Hashanah.
Right, yeah. He's like, go to your shul.
Look the man in the eye.
It's like literally go to shul and like find the people at your shul that went to the same college as you, and they'll give you a nice cushy job at their firm on Wall Street. That's what he was saying. He's like, you know, I don't like to hire from the Ivies. I tend to hire from Morehouse College, or not Morehouse. What was it? It was something. It wasn't Morehouse. That's a black college. It was something else. It was some other. It was like some law, like college in New York that all Jews go to, but it wasn't an Ivy anyway. So he was saying this stuff, and that's the Jewish privilege, because he's not talking to white people. He's talking to a Jew on the street. It was from thestreet.com when he was doing like these real candid interviews on that site, which he started. And he's just telling you, you want to be a Jew on Wall Street, you want to play the markets, here's how you get into it. Here's how you tap all your networks. And so they have those, that access. Again, it's money, but it's not just the money. It's the political and the financial access to these contacts, which is exactly what they accuse whites of. Because if the classic response to you've got white privilege from like a working class or even a lower class white person, it's like, hey, look, I grew up in a broken home. Like, I had a brother who was a drug addict. My family had all kinds of problems. Dad was an alcoholic, you know, no, very little money. You know, we struggled every winter. Sometimes we didn't have heat, blah, blah. And they'll be like, it doesn't matter. Like, they'll be like, that doesn't matter. The fact that you were literally underprivileged growing up, it has nothing to do with the fact, because as a white person, you had all this societal stuff behind. This is not true at all for white people. Totally true for Jews. But in any case, so here's the funny thing. Here's what Ben Shapiro is mad about. And this is almost like he's defending Israel from this leftist critique. And this is why the what they call left-wing anti-Semitism, which is really you could characterize it as anti-Semitism, but no leftist will cop to that. It's no. They characterize it as what it is consistently applying anti-racism and anti-colonialism.
Yeah, it's not actually anti-Semitism.
And including Israel in it.
It's just a weasel attack to stop them from criticizing Israel.
Right.
They're trying, again, remember what I say. These people, when you respond to them on the same frequency that they're attacking you, they switch and they start to psychoanalyze you.
Yeah.
So suddenly they're saying, oh, white privilege, yes, white settler colonialism in the New World, blah, blah, blah. And then you turn around and say, but isn't Israel guilty of that too? And they're like, anti-Semite, that's anti-Semitism. That, you can't say that.
Well, the funniest thing was when they were those guys before the Groypers, there was people that actually asked pretty probing questions of these of Charlie Kirk. And at one of these events a couple of years ago, this guy is asking what's his name? Dave Rubin. Asking Dave Rubin essentially like why? Like why should we all support Israel? What's in it for us?
Yeah, you as a liberal, why do you support Israel?
Yeah, and Dave Rubin was just real weaselly about it, and he's like, and then Charlie Kirk chimes in and he uses this like obviously trained to appeal to like Christian conservatives because he's using biblical justifications for Israel.
Oh,
and then the guy is like, so you're just saying that no matter what, the person that was there first, no matter what, is always the one that gets the country, right? So then we should give America back to the Indians? What do you say? And now, Kirk was thunderstruck. He had nothing to say. But Dave Rubin chimes in. He's like, well, that's a question you got to ask yourself. I'm like, no, it's not. He's fucking asking you. Like, he asked you that question, Dave. No, it's actually not. And see, that's the one thing. Man, if I was that kid, that's one of the ones where I was like, I would pay to be in that kid's shoes so I could just, like, beat the F.O. Rubin. Like, it's not a question for me, buddy. It's a question for you. Yeah. Like, I don't get away with that. Oh, you got to ask yourself that. Because then what Dave Rubin was doing is, like, you as an American white, you need to search your own soul about you living in this society where you oppress Indians or some bullshit. Yeah. Like, no. Fuck that. No. The question is for you, Dave Rubin.
They never, but that's the thing.
I have never heard you answer this question.
You need to learn from them if you're defending, you're losing.
Oh, yeah. Never defend.
You're
always attack.
Yourself, you're losing.
We're very good at that. I mean,
Well, that's because we're from New York and we got some of that Jew stink on us.
Well, it's not just that. It's that we've been doing this for so many years. We used to make bad arguments about this stuff. We used to make failed arguments, but we've honed it to the point where it's like, every time, it's like kryptonite. Israel is kryptonite for these Jews, man. I swear to God, like that conversation I had with that Jewish journalist last time I talked to one of them, literally just asking about Israel. Oh, and that one other...
In a sense, you know, part of the reason some left-wing Jews are somewhat hostile to Netanyahu isn't because of what he's doing to the Palestinians. It's because it's like, it would be a lot easier
difficult
for them if they had a more like a labor Zionist government or something.
Well, if they had a government in Israel that was pretending like the labor government used to be making peace all the time, because remember, that was their approach. That was like the labor Zionist approach for a while, which is still Zionist and still oppressing.
Oh yeah,
and it's still basically expelling
the Israeli parliament is Zionist. Like that's not up for debate in the parliament.
No. But the issue
Arab
is
party in Israel, the so-called kind of token Arab representatives in the parliament, which have to caucus with a Zionist party, are pro-Zionist. So,
they're legally forbidden from being anti-Zionist.
Yeah, that's not up for debate there.
And I mean, so the issue there is like, but their approach PR-wise, and this is why like the New York Times and such, they used to at least, and they still do because they're very critical of Netanyahu in that publication. They come down on the sort of the Yitzhak Rabin side of things. And that was like always be pretending to be making peace and putting all the onus on the Palestinians for the violence.
Right.
And that way, you make it easy for white leftists to either become uninterested or look the other way. And it's the only time you'll see, you know, people of color engage in a liberation struggle characterized as vicious attackers.
Right.
We were talking about on TDS the other day, like, imagine. A good thought experiment to propose to a leftist would be like, imagine...
South Africa.
Yeah, imagine apartheid South Africa trying to attain the kind of status that Israel has in American life and be free from criticism from Americans. Yeah. what kind of operation would the South Africans have to put in place in America to do that? And it's like, well, you'd have to, what you would start describing would just be exactly what Jews do.
Yeah.
Which is like they'd have to control literally all the media. They'd have to control the academic establishment. They'd have to control finance. They'd have to be able to shut people down, and they'd have to be peppered. They'd have to have South Africans that didn't tell you they were South African peppered throughout the population and all these positions of authority. Yeah. Like, it's the only way you could do it.
You'd
right?
have to have South Africans controlling the anti-apartheid group.
Right. Yes. And South Africans would have to be in charge of anti-apartheid groups. Yes.
Yeah. So like that's essentially what they do. Yeah. And I think that for Jews – what I find interesting is that as Israel becomes more quote unquote far right in its domestic politics, the left in America is becoming more and more pro-Israel. Yeah. And I think the moment when that switch happens, we're not going to – it's going to be unexpected and sudden, okay?
Yeah.
Because they're just going to all plot together and say, okay, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off. We're going to go to this pro-immigrant rally or whatever with Israeli flags. But first we have to soften the blow by having Ibrahim Kendi X or whatever his name is and Ta-Nehisi quote.
Oh, yeah.
Some articles about how Israel is.
All these Shabbos niggers have to go defend it. And the other thing is what they do, and this is what they were doing at Canary Mission, because for a while Canary Mission – it's this Jewish site that is dedicated to combating so-called left-wing anti-Semitism, meaning criticism of Israel from the left.
Yeah.
And so, and the only guy I knew for the longest time that was on there was Ryan Dawson. Like, you and me weren't on there. Spencer wasn't on there. Like, none of the alt-right or the white nationalist movement was on there. And the problem was that all the people that were on there felt like it was like a badge of honor to be on there because they were like, oh, I must be being an effective against colonial Zionism because these Jews are trying to just cancel me. So what they started doing was putting white nationalists on there.
Yeah, they put me on there.
And I'm on there too, and we're all on there now. And so the point of that is that when you put this is the weakness of these kind of activists.
Yeah.
Is when you put our name next to theirs, suddenly they get apologies and Jews are pressuring these people. They're apologizing like, I had no idea what I was enabling, and that's how they're going to do it. Is basically connecting anti-Israel sentiment. Like, Jews actually would like to pivot anti-Israel sentiment to being like a right-wing thing. Like, because they want it to just be, it's anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Now, I actually agree that anti-Zionism is a sort of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be able to separate. I agree with Jews on that. But I'm like, that's not something you really want. That's not something you really
it's
want.
It's just political Judaism.
Right, because that's what Zionism is. I mean, it's literally the mission of the Jewish people, even according to the Bible, to do this.
Right.
But I would say...
But they're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, that's correct.
What they do is they'll say anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, but also to claim that all Jews are Zionists is anti-Semitic too.
Right, but then they also say it's okay for you to criticize Israel, but the way you're doing it is anti-Semitic. It's like, okay... Right. Well, you tell me, Jews, give me an example of the right way to do it. And there's just no actual example.
Well, I have an example of that. I have an actual letter that when Israel was looking to annex the West Bank over the summer, the ADL and AIPAC were busy working the Congress and the media on that. And basically what happened is I believe it was AIPAC or the ADL, one of those two.
They wrote the letter objecting to
a phony protest letter.
Yes.
They wrote – this was leaked. They wrote a phony protest letter for all the leftists in the Congress to sign that was like critical of settlements or something or saying they're going –
it was very weak sauce, but it was indifferring it.
It was intended – Jonathan Greenblatt was intending that to be like a magnet of the dissent that was naturally going to happen.
Right,
and that way they could feel good and please their constituents, and then not have to talk about ever again as Israel.
Yeah, well, not have to do anything, to say like, well, I signed this formal or informal like non-binding protest letter. They're not going to pass one of those resolutions because those have like more clout than Jews are willing to give this.
And they're like, worried about that. They're worried like, what if Ilhan Omar passes a resolution?
Or put something on the floor or something like that, and then basically pressures the leftists in Congress based on leftist credentials and talking points that have clout to kind of have to say something. And yeah, it was, that's why that basically the ADL had the right. And this is also something, see, Koffness would also bring this up. So Koffness would then, here you have Koffness as a right-wing Jew, come out, and he would say, see, look, the ADL is just this anti-racist, crazed anti-racist organization that actually harms Jews. It's like, no.
Well, here are the leaked emails where they're discussing this and why they're doing it. And they're saying, we're doing it so that we can end before it so that it goes smoothly.
So it just goes nowhere. Like, so any dissent is purely... Yeah, anyway, so this is...
You know, in public, the Anti-Defamation League is against the West Bank annexation, if I recall correctly. That's their public position.
I think they, like, urge caution or something like that. Yes. Like, they don't even say they're against it. Like, we urge the state of Israel to be cautious or something like that.
Well, a weasel like Koffness would be like, see, not all Jews agree on everything.
Yeah, no, I know. But he knows exactly what's going on.
Their private, which I have. I published them on National Justice, their private memo. And they're like, okay, the annexation's going to happen. We got the left-wing Jews. We got the right-wing Jews. We got all the phony opposition. We got the people that support it. Yeah. Let's all get together and figure out a way for this annexation to go smoothly without too much commotion in America.
Basically, don't give left-wingers that we've given clout in the government any excuse or any reason to do more than just a very token and not even not even in the level. Anyway, but this Daily Wire article, this is where it gets interesting, actually. So here's now, I'm continuing with this. As the deliberate mischaracterization of Israel as a colonialist, and here we put in quotes, settler state. Now, what the fuck is Israel if not a settler state? It is literally, they call it settlements. Like, these controversial Jewish settlements, there's no other word for it. They are Jewish settlements that are actually under international law, at least used to be considered. I mean, of course, that's a joke, right? But they're illegal. They basically said, because again, there was part of this partition of this country that was given to Arabs.
Right.
And Jews just like, oh, fine, we're just going to build a bunch of fucking towns on top of that. And we're going to surround them with razor wire and machine guns and tell Arabs to fuck off and challenge anyone to do it. No one's going to say shit because anybody says anything and the U.S. is there to veto anything in the U.N. Right. So they're settlers. How do you call Israel is the most settler state of any state in the entire fucking world.
Yeah,
it's like literal
settlements.
Yes,
where they tear down a Palestinian family's house.
Yes,
and put a Jewish guy's house.
Sometimes they don't even tear it down; they just take the house.
They take their water supply and they use it. Yeah. The water supply that Palestinians use to take showers and drink water and stuff, and they use it for their swimming pools.
Yes,
that's what the Israelis do.
Yes,
I mean, what more? I mean, this is why, like, Jews will always complain. For example, when Nathan Robinson got fired, right?
Yeah.
The Guardian, supposedly the most left-wing...
Yeah, the left-wing publication in the English language. Mainstream.
They were doing the actual a political argument that until very recently, and again, this is what I'm talking about, the left is shifting towards a pro-Israel stance.
Yeah.
They were making a political argument that until very recently was only made by people like Dennis Prager.
Yeah.
And that argument is... Oh, why do you single out Israel when we do all this for these other countries and they commit human rights abuses too?
Yes.
And it's so funny because
that is a right wing Zionist talking point that was used to defend the argument, from. Yeah.
This is the argument made by the Guardian's editor in chief.
Yes.
And John Mahalan, who's probably a butt boy, who probably got a call.
Who coached him to say that?
Yeah. He got a call from a donor. And anyway, like, that's the argument he makes to Nathan Robinson in private.
Yeah.
And so the point I'm making, though, is that the reason why leftists fixate on Israel is that the Israeli state, in an irony of the universe, is the platonic definition of a villain.
Yes.
According to what is taught in American academia about white people.
Yeah.
Like, all the things that they blame on white people doing 200, 300 years ago are being done as we speak in Israel, and it's really the only country where it's happening.
Yeah, and in fact, and also, like, white people didn't even do those things back then. Like, it's just it wasn't – it's not an accurate representation of whatnot. And the whole idea of, like, literally taking the drinking water from, like, the poor black or brown population and using it for pools, they used to say, South Africans did that. Yeah. When they were doing the anti-apartheid stuff, they would say, oh, this is what these South Africans do. Right. It's like, no, that's what you do.
So the fact that The Guardian now has that
at the only people in South Africa that do that are also Jews.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that The Guardian is doing this now, I mean, it goes to show you that I think what's happening is that Jews are paranoid about anti-Semitism. And
you don't say, really?
Well, more so than before. Yes.
Yeah, no, they're getting real because they're getting hit on all sides, frankly. And it's very precarious. I mean, this is the one thing. Like, sure, they have more power and control than they've ever had, but they're also very exposed. There's a huge discourse online just about Jews, which wasn't the case 10 years ago. Wasn't even the case 5 years ago.
Like firing Nick Cannon, like they did, like immediately firing him.
Yeah,
I mean that was probably in retrospect from a bad call, because this is, like you said, at the height of the Black Lives Matter stuff, where all kinds of black people were spouting their mouths off about all kinds of shit.
Yeah,
and talking all kinds of shit about white people, and you're saying white people have all the power, and yet these blacks are talking about white people in the most horrific ways. Nothing happens to them. One guy makes a kind of offhand comment about being a real Jew from the Bible, like that.
He's cool. Yeah. Yeah, and also saying
it happened in front of everyone.
Yeah, and also, of course, he also was saying the other thing you're saying, not just that, because there's blacks that say that and Jews don't like it, but he was saying, like, it's the Jews in Israel are fake.
Yeah.
He's like, these are not – we're the real Jews, and these like, white people that are colonizing Israel are not us, are not the real Jews. They're fake Jews, and it's like, wait, like, everything there is a big problem. First of all, he's just objectively
and
wrong.
And he also kind of defended Farrakhan in that.
Yeah. Too. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Like, there have always been
that's what this Black Jewish Entertainment Alliance is about, is what they're trying to do is kind of break the influence of Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam.
Yeah, they want to make sure
that – black communities. Even though most blacks aren't black Muslims, Farrakhan, because he's done amazing work – in community building.
Well, it's also just
already there. And so they're trying to kind of break solidarity in the black community.
Well, there's just no reason for the average black person to be against Farrakhan. Even if they're not like part of the Nation of Islam, why would they like hate this guy or immediately have a negative reaction to him when he's brought, like, even if you just don't know much, if a black person doesn't know much, like, oh, Farrakhan, oh, he's a black leader. Yeah, I like him. Like, yeah, why would you have any other reaction as a black?
Another thing is that when blacks get canceled by Jews, they run to Farrakhan, and he protects them, hooks them up. Like Michael Jackson, when Michael Jackson was in trouble, and we can say what you want about that, he relied on Farrakhan to find him houses and hide him out and stuff. You know, so like that's kind of the problem they have. And so what they're trying to do is break that solidarity. Say, hey, listen, you want to – hey, Terry Crews, you haven't made a movie in like 30 fucking years. You want to make a movie? Okay. Join this Black Jewish Entertainment Alliance and attack Farrakhan.
Yeah.
You know, this is what they're doing. They're using the carrot and the stick, right?
Yeah.
And now it remains to be seen if it'll work. You know, and you know, people can call blacks dumb or whatever. And they are. A lot of them are dumb. But there is such a thing as being so dumb you can't be brainwashed.
Well, that's kind of the problem that they're running into, is it's very easy to – like these status conscious and fairly high IQ, like upper middle class white people are like some of the easier people, frankly, for Jews to control, because they can control them by – one with propaganda, by like filling their heads with like all this like crap, this anti-white and – you know, neo-cultural Marxist, or whatever you want to call it, all their garbage ideology, and make that, attach that, being adept at that ideology, attach that to status, attach all these, like, popular, shitty, popular
anti-white movements. Well, it's also, like, really confusing to keep up with it.
Yeah.
Like, even a lot of high-status white people get their lives ruined because they can't keep up with the latest of Jewish speech.
But what that does then is it just teaches them to shut the fuck up.
Right, but blacks, one, are never going to shut the fuck up.
Blacks don't ever shut the fuck up.
And two, like, it's just like, so, wait a second, you're telling me that white settler colonialism is the root of all evil, but I can't criticize it when it's happening in Israel, because, you know, blacks see everyone as white.
Well, so to some extent, some of them do, some of them don't. But yeah. Well, they look at Israel and they see a light-skinned people,
right?
That is oppressing a dark-skinned people.
Yeah, I mean, actually, a ton of blacks do see a distinction between ordinary whites and Jews. That is true. But in the point of the settler colonial ideology and critical race theory, blacks are taught two things: one, close ranks around all blacks, including criminals, but that also includes indirectly Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah.
And two, and in that case, they don't even understand why you're supposed to reject Louis Farrakhan. They're like, yo, this guy actually does more for the black community than anyone else. But well,
it's kind of like Marvin Brown in the Black House in Notting Hill objecting to them putting a slave collar on his neck and be like, no, I'm not white, I'm Jewish. But it's like, wait, okay, so then you get two slave collars.
Yeah.
Because you're literally descended from slave traders. So, like,
well, you know what's funny too is that, like, when it comes to stuff like that, like, even if blacks do get the memo, and some, I think some are getting the message from Jews.
Yeah, some are getting.
The thing is, like, they can't like keep it a secret. So what'll happen is, like, someone will, like, when Nick Cannon said the thing and he got fired, he went on, I think it was like Hot 97.
He went on Hot 97 and basically said Jews like control the media.
God.
Yeah.
Charlemagne the God's like, yo, you can't say that shit. Jews control everything, yo.
Yeah, well, like Charlemagne the God, which is a fucking stupid name, but whatever. Like, he was basically like, yo, like this, my, like this station is run by Jews. Like, and it is. I'm sure it is. And, you know, I mean, it's long been known. I mean, I remember a long time ago we had this video that we played on TDS. Just some rapper. It was that same series where Fat Joe was like, niggas is gay. It was like this interview series. This black guy was interviewing rappers and shit. And one of them is the topic of, like, all the producers, all the rap producers being Jewish. And, you know, rap is run by this guy. What's his name? Lior Cohen.
Yeah.
Lior Cohen, who took over for Rick Rubin at Def Jam and basically runs rap music now. And he's an Israeli. He was born in Israel.
Yeah.
This Israeli Jew, Lior Cohen, runs rap music. He runs it. Okay. And so this one, like, somehow this came up in one of these interviews, and this rapper was talking about it. He's like, yo, for real, nigga, I'm starting to sweat here. I don't like, let's change the topic. Like, it was like these rappers that pose like these gangsters, like, you know, these real, you know how they pose in their personas. Yeah, yeah. And then it's like, oh, even talking about the fact that this entire industry is run by Jews. And of course, it's not, you know, blacks have a reasonable complaint here. Why is it this is the culture Jews are pushing on blacks? I mean, we could talk about that for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go down that route, but
people have done it to death.
Yeah, it's still the point stands.
When Bill O'Reilly used to do his monologue saying, oh, well, the crisis in the black community is caused by rap music talking about pimps and bitches and hoes. What is wrong with the black community? I hate to be the defender. Let's be honest, I'm not the defender of the black community here, but I mean, it's kind of an unfair criticism.
Well,
because they're not creating, they might be doing the rap.
Bill O'Reilly's never going to get at who it is, or if he does, he would say it would be like white people. Because that's the other thing.
Who's putting the money behind that?
Yeah, it's not like blacks are deciding that this is the culture that they're going to be raised on.
Yeah,
It is, and they never decided that. A Jew decided. Lior Cohen decided that.
Right.
Lior Cohen decided that.
And right, I mean, so, Lior Cohen could easily choose to release gospel music for black people.
Right.
He could easily choose to make that cool.
Which, if you're like a middle-aged Jamaican lady, like, that's all they listen to.
Yeah, I mean, you could just find the next Paul Robeson and have that kind of stuff or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But they don't do that. They look for the criminals in the community.
And it's getting, and you know, remember Gucci Mane was saying, like, it was literally in a meeting. He's like, yo, why are these white people telling me to be more of a gangster? And supposedly, according to him, Ice-T was like, those aren't white people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is where this article gets truly rich.
They all know. And because they're black, they got a little more leeway. Well,
Gucci Mane didn't know until Ice-T, like, clued him in.
I'm pretty sure Gucci Mane got in trouble for that. Like,
Well, there was comment about it, but that happened back. That was like
he got in trouble because he wrote, if I recall correctly,
it was in his biography, his autobiography.
He wrote his autobiography.
This nigga wrote an autobiography. But the thing is, like, I just haven't heard much from Gucci Mane since then. But the other thing is that, like, it wasn't made a big deal of because that was like 5 or 6 years ago, and so back then Jews would like let stuff like that go. Yeah. Because it was because no one's reading Gucci Mane's fucking autobiography, right? So it's like, why call attention to it?
Well, the thing is, now with Twitter,
yes,
those things go viral really
yeah.
fast,
and no one needs to. Like, yeah, this is the other thing. One of the problems, I mean, Jews, like, they control. That's why they had to be so in control of Twitter. Like, if you look again, you understand why Jews are like really wary and want social media totally under control. And even today, given all the censorship, Josh Feldberg bitching about the march in Spain, his replies were nothing but like people just being like, fuck you, Jew. Like, oh wow, Jew trying to shut it down, amazing. You know, like, literally hundreds of comments like this, and very few supportive, like only one or two supportive comments were like hundreds of people just like, yeah, you know what, like, oh wow. And most of the comments weren't even were clever because they were avoiding like trigger ban words. They were like, oh wow, amazing. Maybe
well, actually, all he did, I mean, I'm looking at that girl's Twitter right now. Her last tweet has 1,000 likes.
Yeah.
So all he did
blew
was
her
blow
up.
It up.
He blew is, her up.
You
which
just
might
turned
have been,
her into a celebrity.
Which might have been that. Part of his objective so that she's now more high profile to get shut down. Yeah. But the thing is, like, a lot of people in his replies where he's calling for this woman to be shut down are just like, oh, wow, maybe. And of course, then you get the guy that's like pretending to be either it's a troll or it's someone who genuinely thinks he's being helpful. Like the guy who's the conservative who's like afraid of being censored himself is like, well, don't you see that this censorship makes people think that she has a point? Now that could be somebody trolling, but that could also
no
be
conservative
like
conservative would have the balls.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. That's definitely
no. But, that's a troll. That's a troll.
In any case, but anyway, so this. Here's what Jews do in – here's another approach that they take, though, and this is in this Daily Wire article, which, again, we keep digressing from it, but it's really good. So he says, after he talks about the smear of Israel as a settler state, quote-unquote settler state, it's part of an anti-Semitic smear used to delegitimize Israel's right to exist. So it's funny because, like, oh, so when you say that about white countries or when you say that about America, you're effectively delegitimizing white people's right to exist, right? Which is something that the Daily Wire will never say about whites. The Daily Wire will never publish an article saying that the attacks on America as like this post-colonial or colonial state or whatever will never oppose that on the grounds that it delegitimizes the right of white people to exist. Yeah. Never once.
No.
So then we have, according to the working definition of anti-Semitism, provided by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance.
That's on the Black Jewish Alliance website, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, so this is literally Jews came up with this definition. They submitted it to the State Department. And so it says, a definition adopted and endorsed by the United States Department of State under the Biden administration, this form of rhetoric is, quote, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, an example of anti-Semitism. In addition, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement has been criticized by the ADL. Suddenly, here's the Daily Wire rely on the ADL, who have stated that BDS advocates employ anti-Semitic rhetoric and narratives to isolate and demonize Israel.
Yeah.
So this is like, okay, so you are literally bitching that the shit you've been slinging at whites is getting turned around and hitting you, except when it hits you, it fucking sticks because it's real. It's what you're actually doing.
It's true,
doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, and of course, so what do they rely on? They're not, there's no argument here. No. It's just, well, we've got the working definition of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, they pull your card.
Defined by Jews.
They flex.
And adopted by the U.S. State Department. So I love how now the Daily Wire, the funny thing is, adopted by the State Department under the Biden administration. Daily Wire is deferring to that. Look at a whole bunch of articles on the site. It's all like attacking Biden.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you should just get the fuck out of here. Just fuck you.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, it's just, I mean, it is inconsistent, but it is, I mean, they're crazy people. Like, this is the problem, is that our country has been captured by mentally insane sociopaths.
Yes.
And logical arguments don't work on them.
Yes.
You just have to, you know, when they slither their little tongues out and they go, you know, try to call you an ism. No, you can't. Wait, no, that applying the ideology we invented to demoralize and destroy white people to us is anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Thus, you can't say it. And the reason you can't say it is because the State Department, the government, the FBI, the media, every single corporation and financial institution, all of them agree that it's anti-Semitism. And if you're guilty of anti-Semitism, then you get fired.
Yeah.
And possibly imprisoned.
Yeah. And there's so no.
That's how it works. I mean, it's just like when we were talking about Craig Newmark. You know, this is.
We wrote a study.
I'm doing this. I'm behind. I am almost. Me and my group are behind all the tech censorship. But here's a study saying there is no tech censorship. And if you dispute the findings of this study, then you're guilty of disinformation, which I also fund, and thus you get tech censored.
You get censored because we can't allow disinformation. Right, exactly. So say, it's like, dude, everything. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Is how
everything works.
And the thing about the Jew, the worst thing about the Jew is that the Jew will say that with a fucking straight face.
Yeah.
And not feel any, like a white person, even like a really shitty white person, would feel like a certain amount of shame at like saying something so
they'll say it, but then they'll look down.
Yeah, they'll like look at their feet and shuffle their feet and turn red as they say, because they'll realize like how embarrassing it is to just say something so, you know, I mean, chutzpah, there's a reason that's a Jewish word, right? It's not a, I don't know of any similar, I guess you could say like brazenness or brashness, but that's not quite capturing what chutzpah is. Yeah. Chutzpah is a kind of like brazen hypocrisy. That is literally only. There's one thing to be brash and brazen, but it's like the chutzpah is in a hypocritical way. It's like literally crying out as you strike.
It's about having no morals or principles. That's what it is.
Yeah, and it only, of course, it's only a word in Yiddish, right? It's not a word in any other fucking language.
Right.
But so you have to use their word to describe their own behavior. So which is appropriate.
And you see how this works in everything. You see it in the Frankfurt School. You see it in how they were doing the stock market. No, wait a second. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't short stocks. That's what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – and you know what's funny? There's no debate. There's no rational explanation. They used to actually have like a controlled environment, a nice pristine kind of AstroTurf field where two guys, you know, like American Gladiator fights with that stick that has the foam on the ends. You know, that was allowed to a point, but now they're even pulling the plug on that.
They used to do like the Paul Ehrlich versus Julian Simon, like let's go on CNN Crossfire and like calmly debate like which kind of anti-white tack we're going to take, and we'll end up just taking both. We'll tell white people not to have kids, and we'll open the borders. This is okay. We agree. Finally, you agree. Like let's. But
But now they've old debates. There's no more arguments.
Yes.
And there's just no more arguments. They're just like, this is, we can't even let you have a steam valve because even that blows. It's like, it reminds me the problems they keep having as they grow in power, in absolute power. It reminds me of a guy on a sinking ship that has a bucket and he's constantly tossing the water out. So like, you know, you put all your resources, you mobilize all these resources to suppress white speech. Then black people start talking about Jews. So then you start suppressing black people. Then like white liberals start talking about Israel.
Yeah.
Start suppressing them and so on and so on and so on. This is what I was talking about. You know,
Jews are just like constantly bailing the water out of the boat. It's like
When somebody tells you who they are, believe them. That's what that fucking woman said. And the poet. What was her name? I forgot. It doesn't matter. But the point is, you know, someone like Joseph Bernstein, I brought this up before during the week. You know, Joseph Bernstein went out there and he said, kill a white man on your way to work tomorrow. He just said it.
Jesus Christ.
So people were like, you know, I mean, he said this a while back, but he said it. And Joe Bernstein, as everyone knows, was the BuzzFeed journalist that got Sam Hyde canceled from Cartoon Network and so he used his Jewish connections to do it. But the point is, like, of course, Joe Bernstein, what would his argument be in response to that? It would be, I was being ironic. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
But then this guy turns around and Sam Hyde, who's the king of ironic jokes, is using ironic jokes to critique Jewish power.
Yeah.
And Joe Bernstein says, no, this is actually real and an actual threat to us.
Yeah.
So we have to cancel it.
Yeah.
So under Joe Bernstein's own, if you get in Joe Bernstein's mind, that thing about killing a random white man is not a joke.
No, it's not.
If you actually logically apply what he does and how he interprets and perceives the world around him. So what I say is this. If Joe Bernstein says, kill a random white man tomorrow, and then he works day and night as a BuzzFeed journalist to break down the cultural, legal, political barriers against killing random white people.
Right.
We can only assume that he's not joking.
Right.
That he's actually – he means it.
Yeah.
I mean – and forget about the fact that he doesn't get banned for that too, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean imagine. No. Just imagine if I wrote that on my fucking Twitter, I'd have about 1,000 cop cars outside my fucking house.
Oh, yeah, forget about it. If you said, I'm not even going to say it, if I'm not even going to paraphrase it and replace white with Jew, because I would literally, I don't need any more shit. But, like, what was that Jew, that Jew that speaks Spanish that was saying, all I want for Christmas is, like, to end whiteness or something like that? He did the same thing. He did the same thing, and there's occasionally these pushback, because again, when here's one of the problems, when Jews come out and they're blatantly just like genocidal anti-white like that, white people feel somewhat moralized to go out and attack them.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, dude, like literally saying you want to wipe out white people, that's pretty fucking evil. What the fuck is wrong with you? And so then they actually have to retreat. Well, no. It's not what they'll say with the whiteness thing is it's not about white people. It's about the construct of whiteness. So you mean white people's identity. You mean their culture and identity. Well, we already know that when you rip people's culture and identity away from them, drug abuse, suicide, all kinds of social problems come in, like Josh Neal talks about in his new book. Like you create all kinds of social problems when people don't have a grounded identity, a way of understanding themselves in the world. So you ripping that away from white people is basically saying, I want white people to all die. I want white people to suffer and die. Like, and die ignobly.
Well, preventing if the denial of the self-determination of a people is an act of collective genocidal aggression, which is what the IHRA says.
Yeah, and what freaking the Daily Wire says. Yeah.
Again, how can you possibly make the paleocon argument that it's cognitive dissonance? It's just wrong. Because they tell you what is right and wrong, and then everything you get from their corner against your people is, according to their own definition, wrong.
Yeah.
So the only thing a logical person can conclude is that, yes, they're doing it on purpose. Yes, they're coordinating with each other to do it. And yes, they don't feel guilty about it. Okay? Yeah. They just don't. Okay? I mean, it's just – you know, and these people, they create a parallel reality, a simulation. I was talking to Alan the other day, a good NJP friend, and just talking about how, like, you can't have just a straightforward – discussion on anything in this country.
No.
You know, we were talking about the power outage in Texas. You know, there's a good argument on both sides, you know, like about green energy versus natural gas and fossil fuels, right? The problem is when this issue comes up, you have two corrupted lobbyists debating it. And you never get a good faith discussion on it. And the reason you never get a good faith discussion is because Jews have attacked and deconstructed the very concept of reason in and of itself. They've turned it on its head. Reason is subjective. It's all a matter of competing interests in a powerful superstructure of white supremacy. That is the governing ideology of American society. And that's why everything in this country is dysfunctional. That's why nothing ever gets done. That's why no actual popular policies are ever passed.
Yeah.
And that's why you got 3 million people in Texas without electricity in 9-degree weather. Okay.
Well, you can't sit down and solve a problem. Like, you can't sit down and be like, what is the best approach to solve this problem? Because the only issue that the American government gets motivated to do is something that affects Jews.
Yeah.
Whether it be fighting anti-Semitism, not just in America but globally.
Yeah.
And protecting Israel.
Kamala Harris is going to call Sanchez in Spain.
You better fucking believe it.
Yeah. Tomorrow, if not now, like right now, she's calling.
Yeah.
Who is this little girl that's talking about Jews like
meanwhile,
this?
Meanwhile, millions of her own citizens, supposedly her own citizens, which are not really, but supposedly, you know, on paper, are without power. If you call the White House, you're like, yo, Texas has no power. What are we going to do? They'd be like, why are you bothering us with this? We're busy like shutting down a Nazi march in Spain, you idiots. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, this is the response you would get. I mean, they're like, that's Texas's problem. Don't bother us.
Before we go, I want to talk about one other thing that I wrote about today, and it's about Verso Books.
Yes.
Are you familiar with them?
Yes. Yeah, I read the article, and I've known about Verso Books for a while.
Oh, man.
I mean, there's some of the most virulent garbage that they publish in that publication.
Verso Books is the number one anti-white publishing house in the world.
I mean, I was browsing through their titles before we started the show, and it's just virulent shit. It's just garbage. It's bile. But, yeah.
Well, they started off as a kind of torch bearers inheriting the Frankfurt School.
Yeah.
And this is going to be part of my next article, too. And I actually know people – I've known people that have been kind of close to that circle in Brooklyn. Because they have a loft there, and it's like a big Jewish meeting spot, basically. Like, I'm talking about like not just Antifa. Like, Antifas are there, but they also have liberal journalists.
The only one that doesn't get invited to parties there is Michael Edison Hayden. Because he's a nerd.
He's uncool.
Yeah, he's just really uncool. No one wants to hang out with him.
Yeah, but everyone else.
Luke O'Brien probably doesn't get invited either.
Yeah, I don't think so. But like, basically, what it is it's a mingling place for New York high society, and it's funny because it was started by Trotskyists, and now they publish over 100 books a year, and this is where you get stuff like, remember that Sophie Lewis
from Jewess,
writing about abolishing motherhood, motherhood is a tool of oppression, stuff like this.
Else funny about Sophie Lewis, before she wrote that book, years before that, she wrote a paper, which was actually one of my first viral articles on TRS that I attacked, which was because I was still working as a programmer. She literally wrote a paper about how programming languages, and this was like kind of easy outrage porn based on like dumb SJW stuff, right? I wasn't quite as woke back then. She wrote a paper about how programming languages, which are basically just logic, okay? They are literally reliant on logic. You cannot do programming without logic. That's all it is. It's just logic. If you can do logic, you can do computer programming once you understand it. Are like white male, cis hetero, patriarchal oppression because they are like literally reliant on logic. Now, they rely on logic at the physical level if you understand computer science, but it doesn't matter. That's not the point. I didn't want to talk about that, but that's just really funny. Like 6 or 8 years ago, she wrote this paper and she's like, we need to develop a feminist. Now, of course, she's writing. I don't know if she's Jewish or is she just
virulent? She is,
So she looks like she's trying to pretend to be Irish because she's got red hair and her name is like Lewis, but it's like so she's writing this thing like, we need a feminist kind of programming language where like you don't necessarily have like A equals B or whatever. It's just like, it's like, dude, it's absurdity. It's sheer absurdity. But the point of it is to destroy logic and reason. I mean, that's just, it's just obvious attack on that.
It's to deny you the categories you need
To even talk about anything. Yeah, and this was actually this article I wrote attacking her for that and kind of making fun of her it went pretty viral. It was very one of the early things that got a lot of traffic to the TRS site. I don't even know if I could dig it up anymore because it's been so long since all that stuff was on the site. But yeah, very old. That was her.
Yeah. Any kind, even like really binary, like kind of strict computer logic.
Yeah.
Can be used, the zeros and ones. Like if there's such a thing as zero and such a thing as one, then they're afraid just this basically could somehow morph into anti-Semitism.
One and zero is
Jews
true.
Understand that opposition to their power is the ultimate logical conclusion.
Well, in order to have logic, in order to have computer language, in order to have binary, you have the main binary, which is true or false. All logic is built on that. And you know, Aristotelian logic, this is Aristotle made this point himself. Like, you can't have contradictions in that system. And Jews are like, no, wait. What are you talking about? We want to have contradictions. We need contradictions all over the place that people just paper over because otherwise we can't have Zionism and also anti-racism with Jews at the head of both. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just can't, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the cope or the explanation when they tried to have one that these people, say critical theory people, make is that right-wing reactionaries – consider everything in society to be a product of the human will rather than naturally occurring antagonisms. That so they kind of borrow from Marxism in that sense. But the problem with that is that the antagonism between whatever antagonisms might exist naturally between male and female can be, for example, right? Like, let's take the feminist angle. Those antagonisms can be resolved and reconciled through reason.
Yeah.
And through tradition and through, you know, normalcy.
Yeah.
And so the question I would have for someone like Slavoj Zizek, who makes that stupid argument in defense of the Frankfurt School, is that if these antagonisms were so irreconcilable naturally, why is it that they require billions of dollars and permanent media brainwashing the entire academic institutions to be 100% on board just to get 30% of the population to even entertain.
Well, how is it that human society perpetuates itself if it's an irreconcilable? Right. Like, obviously there's tension between men and women, and so what? I mean, that is naturally occurring, but it's resolved through institutions, tradition, marriage, the regulation of sexual behavior, etc.
Through children.
Through having children. Like, what makes men and women together? It's having kids together. And then families. Like, this makes them on the same side rather than opposing each other. And this isn't even a thing they attack because they're like, oh, you know, as soon as white women get married, they adopt their husband's point of view and they become, like, you know, right wing or conservative. It's like, yeah, because that's just nature. That's how it works. And then, of course, they don't want you to think, though, they're like, you know, racial antagonism is also natural, but also not, because race is made up. They have a problem with that one, too, because if you're like, oh, so if racial antagonism is natural, as you're saying, then whites have their side of that and can take their side. Oh, no. You can't have. And of course, racial antagonism is natural. It is observable. That's something that we talk about.
Yeah, and it also it can be resolved for reason.
Through
look at the South.
Yes, it can be absolved. It can be resolved through deciding.
I mean, objectively, like this is
to give each race their own place. That's how you resolve it.
This is an own for a leftist who's an integrationist to say, you know, propose this, right? Let's say tomorrow there was two votes, right? Two referendums: the white people and the black people. They both vote in overwhelming majorities to live in their own communities, right? And then add to that the fact that if the black people are integrated, the cost is that they lose years off their lives, their families collapse, they go from, you know, sharecroppers and small business owners in many cases to ghettoized criminals. And add all these things together, because don't even pretend with an integrationist that about white people, like what happens to the white people, like, 'cause they don't care. Okay. They're trained not to care.
Right.
But talk about it from the black perspective and present that and then ask them, would you still support integration? And what happens then is that their Pavlovian brainwashing will start to contradict their natural sense of reason. And they'll just kind of be stumped, or they'll get angry and then go run away and think about it.
Well, they'll just yell at you yeah. like you're a Nazi or something. Right. Because like that's just like the backup is like not, because whenever, I mean, literally these traps that you can easily yeah. maneuver them into. With just and like a lot of people have been doing it. I mean, right wingers are making sport of this for a long time. Yeah. Is like putting libtards in these positions where their brain short circuits. It's like Captain Kirk in Star Trek, where he like short circuits the evil computer by introducing contradictions and shit like that. Like yeah. remember those old episodes?
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
people would be doing that for fun. Well, I remember them very well, but people would be doing that for fun to leftists. But it's like. But you have to understand, like, why are they like this? And again, you can also even without looking at like the effect on either community, if blacks go out and they say, we want a black, we need black spaces, we need black only spaces, we need spaces to develop as blacks, free from white people and away from Karens and white male cis hetero patriarchy or whatever other buzzwords they want to use, and leftists would be like, okay, that's great. We support blacks because you need to be free of whitey oppression. The problem is, logically, if black people do that, white people are also in their own space now. It just can't be any other way. So, what do you do then? What do you do as
Jews have to constantly be inventing little workarounds?
Yeah, that's just the problem.
They have to constantly be inventing little band-aids for those things. Take for example what Maoists used to think. I've seen recently the Party for Socialism and Liberation getting attacked by people like Alexander Reed Ross saying like he was like mocking them, like he was like posting pictures of like what America would look like. And he was like talking about, okay, so the blacks would get the South, the Puerto Ricans would get Puerto Rico, the Southwest would go to Mexico, then like a bunch of other parts would go to whites and so on. And these were communists. These were Maoists that were coming up with this under the theory of Maoist national liberation and emancipation of minorities. And so he's very hostile to that.
Oh, yeah, because he gives white people a piece of land.
Yeah, and he's very hostile to the idea. So the question is then, like, why, you know, if
– I'm not hostile to Zionism.
Some conservatives are starting to catch on to that. Like, I saw Heather McDonald, who's kind of allowed a little bit.
Well, she works for the Manhattan Institute.
Yeah, she was out there saying, you know, if America is a white supremacist racist country, why do they keep bringing millions of brown people and black people to this country to be oppressed?
Well, why like, can't – I mean, there's a lot of whys. If America's a white supremacist country, why is, like, white supremacy a number one FBI fucking priority? Yeah. I mean, come on, Allie. That's just absurd, right? Well, this is the same thing with, like, the Christian Exu article in Rolling Stone, yeah. where he's like, oh, we say cops and FBI are white supremacists. We fight the white supremacist institutions. Yeah. Like, if institutions are white supremacists, you'd be out of a fucking job. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
You wouldn't be enrolling.
You are you have institutional power. You have institutional power.
Like a model photo shoot.
Yeah, not only that. Well, Sven said the funniest thing. He said it looked like a cutscene from like an Ubisoft game. Yeah. It's like he's like an Assassin's Creed character, so he doesn't look like a real picture.
Or like one of the newer bad guys from Resident Evil.
Yeah. It's like a touched up. It's so touched up digitally.
Albert Wesker.
Yeah, I mean the guy must have a skin condition because that photo was so touched up. It looked like a computer graphic. It was very strange, very surreal picture. But in any case, that aside, like. Christian Exu can only this is another contradiction. He doesn't deal with it. He will just yell at you, Nazi, if you even bring this up.
Yeah.
Or what he'll do is he'll make fun of you for suggesting that a fascist is working class or something. That implying fascists are inherently something.
What they're doing now is when leftists bring this, because leftists are increasingly confronting them with this. They'll say,
there are anti.
You sound like Eric Stryker. That's what they'll say. This is Nazbol stuff. When you say this. So again, Jews argue. They attack you with something that sounds logical. You come up with the easy logical layup because that all their logical arguments are easy layups to beat. And what they do in response is they categorize you in a psychoanalytic fashion.
Yeah.
So they'll say, okay, you're a Nazi, you're a fascist, you're
right.
You're
well, why would you fascist. Why would you say like if you're saying, well, wait, hold on a second, Christian Exu. Aren't you using precarity and the working relationship between labor and capital to your advantage in order to suppress people just because you don't like them.
Right.
He'd be like, what are you? Nazis aren't workers and you're being a Nazi. So, no, I'm critiquing from like from a Marxist perspective, from an analysis of capital perspective, what you're doing. Like, you rely on the relationship of labor and capital, the power relationships created by capitalism. You rely on that to do everything you do.
Of capitalists with your agenda.
Yeah, and the fact that, and you are basically in that power relation, you are on the side of the powerful, which is the capitalist. And you rely on it to be so, because if capitalists didn't agree with you and just told you to fuck off, like if you, like a racist cannot do what you do.
Yeah, you can't get someone fired for supporting Israel.
Like, I can't call corporations and be like, this guy supports a settler colonialist movement in Israel that is literally killing brown people. He's a vicious genocidal racist because he's Zionist. I can't make a call to any corporation. Like, in fact, I might endanger myself by doing so. So how does that work, Mr. Exu? How does that fucking work? The issue is you have institutional power. You have to have institutional power in order to do what you do. You could not do what you do. You cannot be a rebel and do what you do. And they even have to kind of tacitly admit this when they're like, oh, when he made this dossier, the next day the FBI goes after his target, even though he says, I don't work with the FBI. But it's like, you got quite a remarkable turnaround on that dossier you compiled.
You just do all their work for them and then leave it on their doorstep.
Like, right. It's like, I don't work with them. It's like, it's first of all, I don't believe you. I'm quite sure.
In any other context,
you'd
just be called a narc if you did that. Like, let's say you're a guy who volunteers to collect intelligence on drug dealers and then post it on the internet and then they get arrested. What would they call you? You'd be a narc.
Yeah.
Right?
But he didn't, in this case, though, this dossier he compiled on this guy he went after. He didn't post it on the internet. He sent it to Daniel Harper, so he says. And then he's sort of like almost like throwing Daniel Harper under the bus as the guy that called the FBI. Because somewhere somebody called the fucking FBI and handed them this dossier of research, because they were very quick to turn around and arrest this guy that they targeted. So it's like, all right.
Well, I'm going to tell you something about Christian Exu that very carefully, because I'm not supposed to say, but I heard from a little birdie.
If you're going to release this later, if this, you know, I mean, we'll say what you
want. Oh, I'm just saying, from a little birdie told me that he's actually doing really badly in his lawsuit, and that there are things happening in the lawsuit. I can't go into detail. There are things happening in the lawsuit that are very bad for him, and apparently, that Rolling Stone article that came out where he owned to the – no more plausible deniability, no more nothing. He owned to the facts in the case that Daniel D'Ambly in New Jersey is suing him over.
Yeah.
And apparently this is causing some conflict with his legal team.
Here's a funny thing. Here's something I'll say.
It shows you that he's very vain, you know.
Well, yeah. Here's something I'll say is that if you – are involved in a lawsuit involving certain conduct, is going to piss your lawyer off quite a bit if you do like a double page spread in a magazine, full color double page spread, talking about said conduct, just bragging about it. Like, wait a second, hey guy, I'm supposed to be defending you here, and you are going out and self owning in the media. Now that Rolling Stone article was also because you remember with the SPLC lawyer in going after the Glenn Allen lawsuit was relying on media coverage to kind of like coerce the judges, like browbeat the judges. And so that's another tactic that they're using, is they want to give positive media spin so it makes any judge or jury or whoever in that case feel like they're going to be targeted by the media
The problem in the D'Ambly v. Exo case is that the media is by and large ignoring it.
Yeah.
And the reason they're ignoring it is because the facts are bulletproof. Now, if you look at D'Ambly's case, he's suing everyone. He's suing Exu. He's suing Twitter. And he's suing the Daily News, which is his employer. So what happened was Exu got the Daily News to fire him.
Right.
The dumbass editor at the Daily News or manager or whatever he was told D'Ambly, this is all public knowledge.
He copped to it straight up.
Like, well, he said, I have to fire you. I have to fire you for being a member of a group called New Jersey European Heritage Association.
Right.
Because of the fact that we're getting death threats like crazy at the Daily News.
Which is also why, because of this lawsuit, now I had never really heard of that organization before, and I don't think it's that big of a deal, but suddenly all these Jewish websites started really featuring that organization as like one of the top white supremacist groups in the country. And it was purely because of this, because they needed to add, again, when they don't have facts on their side, they just up the ante in the media.
Yeah.
They create media, quote, media facts. Like, they create just these issues. Like, now here's all this ammo that a lawyer can use in a complaint that does nothing to do with the record, nothing to do with the law, nothing to do with the facts. It's just opinions out there in the media that can be brought to bear to basically tell a judge, like, hey, if you decide against this client, all these media outlets are going to talk about you.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what's going on here. So in that case, D'Ambly is because, again, New Jersey – talk about lucky. New Jersey law, like northeastern states, have very strong laws about racial discrimination. So what D'Ambly is doing is he's saying that the Daily News discriminated him, one, because they – I mean, this is actually – they argued this perfectly.
Yeah.
One, they're discriminating against him because he's a member of an ethnic heritage group.
Right.
That – and he brings up the fact that some of his coworkers were members of other racial activist groups.
That's perfect, yeah.
That were non-white.
Yeah. And they can't
fire them. And so he says the fact that I'm a member of an ethnic advocacy group and that I got fired because terrorists were telling the Daily News they were going to bomb them if they didn't fire me – is illegal.
Yeah.
To do that.
It's like racial harassment. Yeah, it's civil rights. This is what we've been talking about. Start using this against them, because here's the thing. Now, that's why they have Jews. That's literally why Jews went out there and they put New Jersey European Heritage Association on like lists of hate groups and such. But it's like, show me a single hate incident linked to this group. You can't. Right. You can't show me
any. All they did
there's
is.
There's not a single incident of even like intimidating blacks or something. There's nothing.
All they did was put up flyers saying it's okay to be white.
Right. And if you want to say that's intimidating blacks, really? What's the Black Lives Matter sign then? And again, like I said, this is why I tell people, document all the pro-Black Lives Matter shit you see, because someday this shit might be important to document. Well, the town in which this flyer was put up has official sponsored by the town Black Lives Matter material in public places. Yet this flyer, which says nothing, now again, they'll fall back. Well, that's a flyer put out by Nazi groups. Who fucking cares?
Right.
It doesn't say anything about blacks. It just says it's okay to be white.
Well, another thing that's working in D'Ambly's favor is the fact that the New Jersey Department of Homeland Security, which I don't know what the fuck that is. That might be like a state thing. But that law enforcement
said, Antifa is a terrorist.
Said Antifa is a terrorist group. So here we have the facts of the case. The Daily News fired me because Christian Exu is part of a criminal enterprise called Antifa, a criminal terrorist enterprise, got all of his supporters. He doxed me. He doxed my address, my workplace, put a bunch of phone numbers. Then the workplace, because of my membership in an ethnic organization, and then my workplace was flooded with bomb threats, murder threats, and so on. And then my manager fired me over this.
Right.
So he's got all the – this is a bulletproof case, which is why
the question
Christian
is,
Exu going out there and trying to gin up media, calling his Antifa friend Kroll.
Andy Kroll. Yeah, supposedly no relation to Nick Kroll, but who knows?
Calls up his old friend from Shul. And yes, Christian Exu is half Jewish, by the way.
Really? Okay. Yeah. See, I was always not sure about that.
And he calls up his old friend from Shul, Andy Kroll. He's like, bro, I need some good publicity. And he's like, oh, good. I work at the Rolling Stone magazine. So they get together. They do this fluff piece, this propaganda piece. But the problem is, I guarantee you that his lawyer said, don't fucking do it. Don't fucking do this.
Well, the lawyer's instinct is like, don't put yourself in the spotlight when you're part of a lawsuit. That's any lawyer will tell you that.
Yeah, and I think that because Christian Exu, and I've heard this from sources that know him, that he's an extremely vain
guy,
like more than the average anarchist. He is an extreme attention whore.
Yeah.
And I think he just couldn't help himself. And he's like, listen, I'll get you the best photographer. He'll Photoshop you to look like a Resident Evil villain.
They're gonna nice pea coat and scarf and look like some douchebag from like a British fucking mystery thriller. he looks like he's one of those shitty BBC detective shows. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah,
he looks like the poster of that. He put like a font like The Inspector next to it, and it would be like that's like Christian Exu right there.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some guys saying that what the Rolling Stone magazine article is trying to do is meme them into the new FBI. Like that's yeah. kind of and
well,
I,
that was Alex's. That was literally Alex's point. I mean, Alex might be the one that wrote that article.
Yeah, like that's kind of. But I got that before he wrote that from another guy, and I'm sure that's what they're attempting to do. But the fact of the matter is, like, if the New York Times did that profile piece, you might have a point. But like, literally, you know, no one reads Rolling Stone
anymore. Is garbage, and no one cares about it, and it's like shitty, and it's a terrible publication.
It only has meaning in the eyes of Bugmen.
It doesn't. I mean, Rolling Stone has very little clout. I mean, it was like they were doing like shitty boomer, like what aging boomer rock star is going to be on the cover this week or whatever, or this month. No, it's just, it's a totally low tier. I mean, that was the publication that Vegas Tenold tried to get me to do a thing in like years ago. And I was like, dude, like, honestly, bro, like,
Vegas
no.
Tenold is probably his late, mid to late 40s. So he probably thinks like, oh man, Rolling Stone.
Well, he thought it would impress me. He thought it would play on vanity to get me to be like, full color spray with you. I'm like, dude, the last thing I fucking want. I was like, first of all, that's like way too low clout for me. Like, it's not even tempting on the grounds that it's like fucking Rolling Stone. It's literally garbage.
Well, there's a kind of America worshiping European in his 40s. It's a very specific type that's like Rolling Stone. I made it. You know, that kind of thing.
But that shit is like, I feel like that went out. And last time that had any clout was like the 90s at least.
Yeah, but for someone like him, it's actually a huge honor to be working there. You know, it's like kind of like it's, all these magazines are the same. I mean, I don't know if you caught this.
I don't even know if Andy Kroll like works there, if he's just because he's Jewish, which he definitely is with that last name. He can just get an article. That was just the easiest one for him to get that piece into, right?
Well, did you... You know, one other thing. Did you see that article in Cosmo magazine defending cannibalism as a sexual fetish?
No. Jesus Christ.
You know the whole controversy with Armie Hammer? Where he's like a movie star, and he was messaging women, random women, talking about his sexual fantasies. And then he's like, oh, man, I just want to eat you. And she's
but
like,
he
oh,
didn't
really?
Mean it in that way, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh, really? You want to eat me? Oh, tell me more. Yeah, I want to chop off your arm and fucking eat it like a chicken.
Wait, what? Excuse me? Like, yeah. I thought.
So they thought that, you know, these broads, they thought they could, like, you know, make some trouble for him. And, you know, they're probably legit creeped out by it.
Well, that's fucking weird, dude.
Because
like,
it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. And so they went public with it. And, and it's a whole big thing, right? But anyway, like you'd think that would be indefensible, right?
Yeah.
So here you have Cosmopolitan magazine, which until like I remember, like when I was a kid, teenage girls used to read it for like fashion. Like the most edgy thing you would get in Cosmopolitan back when I was a kid was like, "Does he like you? It's 10 signs the cute guy likes you back." You know, that, you know, oh, do your star signs match? You know, that was the kind of stuff that they had in there.
Yeah.
Well, now, because Cosmo is now like a really niche kind of thing, because no one reads it, now they, like, I wrote on Twitter and people found this funny. I hate to talk about Twitter, but it got some traction. And I wrote, so the girl that wrote it is a chick called Maria Del Russo. And she's just like a thought. Like, she's not like, you know, she might be pretending to be political, but you could tell that she got to Cosmo and she's like, finally, my dream is realized. I can write about makeup all day, right?
Because
that's what Cosmo always was. But now, like, what I wrote on Twitter is this. I said, imagine being a stupid bitch who realizes her dream of writing about fashion at Cosmo, only to have your Jewish editor force you to write a philosophical defense of cannibalism.
I mean, dude, this society...
I wrote that before knowing any facts.
Yeah.
Okay, I saw Maria Del Russo. If I was a dumbass conservative, a superficial thinker, I'd be like, look at these girls. What's going on with the world today? So I look at the – I look at her Twitter and I look at the thread where she posts the article. It's called – yes, this is the title. Yes, there's a safe way to have a cannibal fetish.
Oh my god. Dude, why is this even something you're – like why are people even subjected to this?
Yeah. Well, here's the answer. She wrote – someone wrote underneath like there's some slut and she goes, extremely good headline here. My eyes literally went like – and then it's like the pointed eyes, right? And Maria Del Russo goes, I can't take credit for it. My editor, Jessica Goodman, added the headline and polished this up into something that shines. So this stupid broad doesn't really grasp the what she's even doing here.
Yeah.
And my guess is that her editor, Jessica Goodman, at Cosmopolitan Magazine, wrote the whole fucking thing. And just put her name to it, okay? That's what's really happening here. Now, Jessica Goodman knows exactly what she's doing, okay?
Yeah.
Maria Del Russo doesn't. And that's not to say all whites are good or naive, but a lot of whites are really are goyim, okay? The Jews are right about that. Tons of whites are, especially like this type of person, like Maria Del Russo, working at Cosmopolitan Magazine. I mean, the bitch has a fucking two-hour chewed piece of bubble gum for a brain, okay?
Yeah.
So why are they putting her up to this is the question. Of all the things that you can be promoting in Cosmopolitan Magazine, even gross stuff like, you know, and they always have the, you know, this is actually something they're doing with all women's magazines. I don't know if you've been keeping up with Teen Vogue lately, but it's essentially like an Antifa.
Oh, yeah, plot. Dude. Yeah, we've been talking about Teen Vogue for a few years. It's basically totally Antifa. Women's magazines have been doing this for a while. What's interesting is that Teen Vogue is like even worse than Vogue.
Yeah.
I mean, and American conservatives were mad because Teen Vogue was basically giving lessons in how to have anal sex. Which is something, it's like, that's even bad for, like, but you'd maybe even expect that in one of the adult magazines, like women's, yeah. You know, but it's still, it's still bad, but I mean, it's like, yeah. I'm not saying it's right, but I mean, you would
find something like that in something like Playboy.
Yeah, or like Hustler, more likely, but
yeah.
Like,
you find that in like one of the brainier Playboy articles. Oh, how to convince her to take it in the butt.
Well, it's not even that though, because this wasn't about how to convince anybody. The assumption was you want to do this, and here's just how you do it, quote unquote, safely. And it's in a little girl. It's in a magazine for like 15-year-old girls.
Yes.
And everything in Teen Vogue is also like trans. It's all trans shit. It's it's all. And again,
it's off rails. But that's
when
because
you've
given up on a profit-making model.
Yeah. Well, they basically put this Pajit woman as the editor, and she gets all this praise in like the woke Jewish media for like not being simply, because they're like, it used to be Teen Vogue was just a way to sell makeup to teenage girls. And now they're not doing that. It's like, no, they're selling them, like, having anal sex and transgender stuff.
Yeah, and punching Nazis. Like, that's another big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a 15-year-old girl's going to punch me. I mean, give me a break.
Well, what they're doing is they're, like, lionizing the thing. So they're, like, telling girls, like, you should like Nazi punchers or something. I'm surprised they didn't do a Christian Exu piece in Teen Vogue.
Yeah, I know. What they're trying to do is like, no, stop finding the Nazis sexy.
Yeah.
Find this, like, emaciated
It's the bug man that hates Nazis is, like, the guy you're supposed to be, like.
And they're trying to make that catch. But I'm just like...
It's never going to, because of natural...
Do 15-year-old girls even read Teen Vogue anymore? Because I can see a typical teenage girl opening up Cosmo and seeing an article promoting literal motherfucking cannibalism. as a sexual lifestyle choice and being like, whoa.
Well, I can imagine even the most irresponsible parent being like, all right, like that's gone. Like, listen, no more of that. That's
out. We already got you on the pill. We're progressive. Yeah, like, we're not that progressive.
But what's funny is Teen Vogue isn't really, I mean, I don't know who it's read by or not, but it seems like, one, its circulation is gone down. And this was it's read by the people that write it. It's read by Bugman in fucking Bushwick. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the people that write for it are the kind of people that read it and the kind of people that praise it. I don't know what its circulation is amongst actual teenage girls.
I think Teen Vogue was taken out of circulation. It's now just an online publication.
Right. It's just
basically what my theory is that, like, some Jewish CEO at Condé Nast has a little Shoshana just graduated NYU, and they're like,
yeah, this is the, like, project that they give her.
Daddy, I need a job. Yeah. And they're like, okay, here's this, like, thing that we stop, like, we don't get any profits from anyway. Here, entertain yourself with this little magazine. And then little Shoshana writes articles about cannibalism.
Yeah, so I don't know. I brought up this cannibalism article. It's just stupid. It's like, as a fetish educator, why is there such a thing as a fetish educator? Why are you even doing
this? It's just a porn star. Like, it's just a mulatto porn star. Like, that's all it is.
She's actually saying, I'm tired of seeing the Army Hammer allegations used against the BDSM community. So basically what this actually kind of was is the Jewish defense of, like, all these weird sexual fetish communities, because they don't want these. Again, remember, Jews hate so-called moral panics based on conservative sexual sensibilities about traditional male-female sexual roles and traditional ways of having sex.
Oh, yeah, that's in the Frankfurt School.
Yeah, no, they're all. It's like, if you're basically like, no, like, sex should be, you know, basically two men, man, woman that love each other and they have PIV. And it's normal, and sure, you can have it for fun, but it's still, like, it's about the male, female, mother, father, family thing. Oh, right. No. That is an authoritarian, reactionary, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it's just normal. It's just natural.
Well, what they hate about sexual mores in terms of hatred of homosexuality, hatred of I don't know, I guess cannibalism now. I mean, they actually studied. Well,
you're putting cannibalism in the same. Okay, if you want to, like, associate these two, it's like they're not actually far different, but paraphilia.
Well, they've done studies on this that, like, people that the more angry you get at the thought of pedophilia, the more likely you are to have an authoritarian personality. Yes. They've actually directly studied this.
Well, that makes perfect sense logically that this would be the case,
right? And so what they don't like about I disagree with the Catholic conclusion about why Jews – like E. Michael Jones. I disagree with this conclusion that it's just for social control, because there are tons of instances of – because the Catholics, they put all kinds of sexuality in the same kind of category. So, like, a womanizer gets put in the same category sort of as a sexually controlled individual as, say, a pedophile, right? Or not in the same category, but they're both kind of controlled because they give in to their libido, they say.
Yes.
But there are tons of examples of womanizers who were also authoritarian personalities. Look at Joseph Goebbels. Look at Mussolini.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, so the Catholic conclusion is incorrect, in my opinion, on that subject. However, the actual critique is not bad, and the actual facts in the case are pretty damning. And basically from my reading of Adorno and Horkheimer and people like that, what I gather from their perspective on this is that if you have a culture that regulates individual subjective sexual desire of any kind, okay, including pedophilia, they don't say it outright, but that's the assumption.
Yeah.
And also other like the Jewish sexologists that inspired the Frankfurt School or were adjacent to it all were pro pedophilia. Okay, so basically what they don't like about it isn't just the concept of controlling people. That's part of it, but it's also the fact that if you have strong sexual mores in a society and strong taboos around homosexuality and pedophilia and now cannibalism, that takes you out of the mindset of subjectivity and individualism.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Like when a homosexual promotes his lifestyle, which is disgusting, it's universally disgusting. When a homosexual promotes his lifestyle, the conservative is disarmed, because under the conservative mindset, you can't, in the Anglo-Saxon sense, you can't trample on individual consent and rights.
Right. And in fact, they have conservatives that are now pro-gay because of this. And in fact, conservatives are we are more pro-gay than the left.
Name me a public-facing conservative that isn't gay.
Honestly, conservatives have always been gay, but that's beside the point. I mean, literally, and I'm not saying gay, they're gay. I mean, they're fucking homosexuals. Like conservatives in America and in Britain have been literal homosexuals for a very long fucking time.
Well, I'm trying. Well, the thing is, though, is that now they're really open about it, because I don't want to smear the guy, Ryan Gudurski. He's a good guy, and if he's a queer, that's his business. But
oh, I didn't know he was a queer.
Is he one? Because he sure seems that way in some ways.
I never thought about it before.
And when you go on, when you watch Fox News, Tucker Carlson or Laura Ingraham or anything, every single conservative personality or journalist that they bring on as a guest that's under the age of 40 is extremely flamboyant and extremely gay. And if they're not, they're usually non-white. So Pedro Gonzalez is macho, but he's part American Indian and so on. And so it's now essentially the conservative is the queer and the progressive is the transsexual.
There's no white masculinity, basically, in Jewish media. There's no white masculinity. Whites
or in politics.
Yeah. Yeah, whites are like fags.
That's why people love Donald Trump so much.
Yes.
However fake it was.
Well, yeah, he was. Yes, it was like this cartoonish thing, but still, yes.
You know, and so the thing is that essentially, it's not just that social control, right? I mean, it is in a sense, but the social control is not through your libido; it's through your authoritarian impulses. And so, if you make it. If you switch the taboo from authoritarian prescribing of fags and change it to the prescription or prescribing of people that say fags should stay in the closet, you have a totally different political environment.
Right. Well, the E. Michael Jones conclusion, my understanding is that it's something like because by getting everyone to indulge in their libido and hedonism, they become disinterested or easy political pawns. Something like that, right? So they get, and not just that now members of Congress get tempted by Jeffrey Epstein with underage girls and then they can be controlled with blackmail, but it's like, this is my understanding of libido dominance.
No, I agree. That's exactly what I think.
Now, there's some element of that. There's definitely an element to that, but I think it's not entirely. I think you're right that they want to preserve every kind of individual sexual preference is something that's still on the table and even legitimate, because if you attack anything like that from the perspective of collective social consciousness, like this is bad for society, for even individual people to be like this, or for society to accept this, because it could, you know, one of the things we were talking about, and we talked about a lot of gay stuff on Tedious like last week, was these studies that say they started to actually refine how they talk about homosexuality, and even in the scientific literature, where they're like, okay, instead of going from let's study homosexuality as a problem, let's study homophobia as a problem, but also we have to actually understand homophobia. And they're like, homophobia, so-called negative reaction to homosexuals, or an aversion, even an extreme aversion to homosexuals, is actually something that they see across every race and every culture and every society. And people, it's like they see homosexuals as like plague carriers. It's like people would react to someone coming into their town that they know has an infectious disease. They'll react to, without Jewish influence in society, without Jewish power controlling a society.
And really,
naturally, people will react to that man.
That instinct is only suppressed through state power,
right?
Or,
exactly.
Media and so on.
Exactly. But any culture will have this reaction. They'll see the homosexual, and they're like, "It's possible." And I think there could be literally a biological basis to this, where literally he's a disease carrier, like not just the disease of homosexuality, but actual diseases that he gets from the homosexual behavior. So there's probably both things are at the root, because homosexuality is a dangerous behavior. It yeah. does make you die early. It does get you literally infected with the plague, with various plagues that you die from. And if you spread it to other people by practicing it openly in a community, more people get these diseases. I mean, this is like a fundamental analysis of it. But it's like, yeah. but you can never have that. Like, this is what Jews always want to make sure you don't have that, because particularly the thing, they'd actually be more happy with someone who was like, "I just personally don't like gays, but I don't say anything," than someone right. who's like, "No, it's really bad for society to have homosexuals right. or to allow them to run rampant, because right. because doing that means you're making a collective statement on behalf of the good of society. You just can't do that." Like, Jews,
right? Well, the point they make, the Frankfurt School and other Jews make about that, is that it's easy to jump from that to, hey, Jews,
yeah, to Nazism, right? Yeah, right. Which is why the Jewish
Trotskyists ran them out of the country.
It's also why the Jewish Trotskyists at the WSWS defended Dominique Strauss-Kahn, because they were saying he wasn't homosexual, but he was accused of sexually abusing someone, and Jews saw the reaction. They also were saying it was bound up with a certain anti-French feeling in America relating to neoconservatism in the Iraq War. I don't know how accurate that was, but it's like, even if that was part of it, like, the guy still raped a hotel maid and needed to go to jail for that, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, now, their thing is, like, you can't have any... Now, these people claim to be against the Frankfurt School and against this sort of postmodernism, as they call it, because they're materialists, they're objective yeah. Marxists or whatever they say. It's all self-flattery. But the point is, why are you then defending sexual predators? They defended Woody Allen, too. Why? Why are you defending these people? Because they're, like, sexual moral panics. I mean, their point is straightforward. They don't even hide behind it. They literally say sexual moral panics lead to Jewish pogroms.
Yes.
Period. Done. Like, done and done. Like, they just jump right to the conclusion. Frankfurt School obscures it somewhat, but
They don't obscure it.
I guess you're right, yeah. But anyway, well, it's interesting that the Jewish Trotskyists effectively say the same thing. When they were questioned on it, they were like, how far is it from a moral panic over sexual behavior of a Jew to a fascist pogrom? It's like a hop, skip, and a jump.
Note the language, you moral panic. Again, psychoanalysis.
Yeah, it's an analysis of the rational idea of morally horrified at raping a hotel maid,
yeah,
or homosexuality, rational, or raping children, or any.
Yeah, or Woody Allen at the most charitable.
I mean, let's be honest. Like,
molesting his stepdaughter and, like, then dating her.
Like, grooming, literally grooming and marrying his fucking stepdaughter. I mean, it's the most disgusting thing. How long do you think he was abusing that girl? How long do you think he was sexually touching that girl?
Even if he didn't lay a hand on her, dude, he was definitely mentally abusing her.
I mean, I seriously doubt. Like, again, I don't want to get in trouble for any kind of slanders here. My opinion is that he was probably engaging in sexual activity with that girl since she was very young.
That's
girl.
What Mia Farrow's other daughter said.
Yeah. That was a Roman Farrow.
That he was molesting her.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the thing. So you have to understand this in the lens. I like Josh Neal's analysis more than E. Michael Jones's, because his is about the split between – because he doesn't have – no offense to Catholics. I don't – you can be a Catholic and so on. But there's no baggage in the politics or the analysis. And the analysis, Josh Neal says, is it's not Catholic Jews versus Catholics.
Yeah, no,
it's authoritarians, and Catholics can be authoritarians, which is why it's easy to get confused.
Yeah.
Catholics can be, for sure. Catholicism is an authoritarian religion. That's why Jews hate it more than any other kind of Christianity. I mean, I was reading the other day about, this is a small digression, but, about Ernst Zundel, how he was mentored by a Quebecois fascist,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
that in French Canada, they didn't have public schools. They had the Catholic school and the Protestant school. And this Quebecois fascist lobbied hard against founding a Jewish school. And he was successful. And so the Jews were forced to attend one of the Christian schools. And they always, without a single hesitation, chose the Protestant schools. So, you know, clearly they see Protestantism, and this isn't to offend Protestants, of course, but they see that as more conducive because it's less authoritarian.
Well, it's not centralized and controlled. So it's easier to,
right.
to frankly get, and there's all and kinds of different sects of Protestantism. Now they attack Protestantism too. They attack particularly evangelical Baptists and such. But the thing with the Catholic Church is that the Catholic Church is an institution with power and clout. To itself, which is also
and a myth and a tradition.
Yes,
and an ethnic, you know, it's Rome,
which is why now Jews have exercised control over it. They subverted it. They entered it. They yes. used some of its own premises against it, like the idea that Jews can legitimately convert. And maybe there have been legitimate Jewish converts in the past, but it doesn't. You always have to raise an eyebrow at a Jew that's like, "I want to be a Catholic." Okay, why? 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 Right? And it's like, well, as it turns out, we know why when we look at Vatican II and such. So now the institution has been subverted. They don't really defer to it, though, because they're worried that if it slips out of their hands, it has this whole superstructure unto itself that could theoretically be used against them if they're not constantly controlling it. And, right. and so they always have to be working. It's not – now, there is – like, I can understand why if you were Catholic, you could perceive Jews against Catholics because Jews do seem to target your institution for subversion. But you have to look outside of that world because they're targeting everybody.
Right. They target every authoritarian institution for subversion. And the only one that they were unable to subvert was Nazism.
Because it was literally like just no Jews. Like it was.
That's why they didn't target it. Yeah. They fought a war.
They targeted with missiles.
People died.
They targeted with missiles. They targeted with bombs and guns.
They literally started a war where 50 million people died.
Yes.
Including many of their own, just to destroy this institution. And that's kind of this is where Jews, in their arrogance, after starting this war, They were the ones that pulled the strings in Russia, in America, and Britain to get the war going.
Yeah.
It was them, and they were coordinating internationally to do it.
Yeah, no question about it.
And then they have the nerve to blame the Germans for a few hundred thousand Jews dying in concentration camps from dysentery and starvation.
Many of which also actually died once the British had taken
it. And this is ultimately the conclusion of the Frankfurt School for why Western civilization must be destroyed.
Yeah, the Holocaust. They literally said, like, I remember now. I got some pushback.
That's Mark. I think it was Marcuse or Adorno. One of those. He said all poetry. Poetry died in Auschwitz.
It was Adorno. Now, my understanding. Now, another translation of that is there can be no poetry after Auschwitz. Yes. My interpretation, now Borzoi pushed back on this because he had a different interpretation. My interpretation of that statement is we have to destroy white culture.
Yeah.
Like literally, like not like there can be no, not the idea being like, okay, Auschwitz was such a tragedy that I can no longer see and appreciate beauty and poetry. No. Literally, there can be no poetry. Like we cannot allow Goyim to have ideas of beauty, poetry, truth, idealism, because of Auschwitz.
Yes.
We will no longer allow it. That's the way I read that.
That would be the vengeful. I mean, this is kind of the problem if you debate someone that is very well versed in the Frankfurt School. Like, they always have ways around these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone wants to defend it. But, the thing is, though, is that your interpretation is the vengeance interpretation, which is perfectly valid in my opinion. But my interpretation could be, this is a very charitable one, is that what he's saying is that Western civilization, the fact that Western civilization, which he describes as being self-identifying as based in reason plus technology, mechanized civilization, that these two things together led to Auschwitz, that the ultimate conclusion of Western reason, of Hellenism and, the romantic thought and so on in Germany, that the ultimate conclusion of this Western reason was Auschwitz. And I don't know if I disagree.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, because I can see that one too, but it's like, but again, there's no contradiction between these interpretations, which is like, because they do say that. They do say essentially authentic European, because our countries and cultures have been so intermingled and controlled by Jews for so long, sometimes it's really difficult to sort things out. But when you look back at true European societies, Europeans were confidently in control. These were authoritarian societies.
Yes.
And they were also stable. And they weren't, sometimes they were oppressive, sometimes not. But they were like true, like Rome, Germany, actual European self-confidently in control of system.
Even the early Mormons.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, there's, yeah. Okay.
The Mormons, as funny and goofy as they are, the Mormon society they created in Utah was an authoritarian society, and yes, arguably still is.
Yeah, and it was also entirely white, and it was also racial. Like, there was racial prohibitions, yes, on Mormonism for a very long time until those were all subverted.
Right.
They even had myths like black people are black because they sinned in a past life or something like that.
The point
is literally a punishment. But yeah,
is that the structure of Mormon society was similar to National Socialism. So in other words, European reason, Western thought and philosophy, when it intersects with technology, ultimately leads to National Socialism.
Yeah,
and that's what you get with pure non-Jewish European reason.
Right.
And that's, I think, the point of the Frankfurt School, is that we have to destroy European reason. And this is, again, the most charitable interpretation of it. Like, I'm actually prone to, like, I bet, like, Borzoi was trying to be more charitable. Like, what did he say?
He was taking up basically, like, your perspective on it.
Something, yes,
like that. I can't remember the conversation.
That's a charitable one, but if you live around Jews long enough, you know not to take anything they say.
I always think about it like that. But anyway, yeah. I think we can probably end this one there. This was a great show. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. And sorry, no callers this time. Maybe next time, but just
next time.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we will see you all next week. Keep listening. Shows every day on TRS. You know what they are. You know when they are.
Yeah. Take care, everyone.